Just as a way of announcement, we expect there'll probably be a filled room today. So for those of you who may see someone standing, we do have the audio piped into 500 South. So if for some reason you leave and come back in, there are no chairs available. You won't be able to see us, but you'll at least be able to hear us. So the room next door will have the audio on all day. Members, we have the agenda before us. The primary purpose of today's meeting is to get agreement on the projects that we would recommend be funded out of the first year collection in the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the amount that would be allocated to those projects. Recall that we had established two meeting dates in March today and 2 weeks from today. It would be my goal that on the 23rd of March we would come back with a draft appropriations bill and that we would go through that. And hopefully on the 23rd we would complete our work and draft our recommendations in the form of a bill that would be forwarded to the leadership in the House and the Senate. We are going to be recessing at noon till 2:15 approximately because the House and the Senate will be in floor session for some period of time. My best guess, and Greg or Janelle help me out, but I'm understanding about 2 to 2:15 might be a pretty good ballpark guess about when they might be back in. Okay, we will not start again until both houses have their floor sessions have adjourned. So with that, our order of business today is to get agreement on the projects we're going to recommend for funding out of the fiscal 2010 appropriation in the amount. So having said that, we have an agenda before us. Is there a motion to approve the agenda? Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have an agenda. Members, the meeting minutes from the last meeting are in your packet. Hope you've had a chance to look them over. Motion to approve the meeting minutes as drafted. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have meeting minutes from February 23rd. Last night, the Conservation Partners Committee met, and Scott, I would turn it over to you as the chair of that committee and give us an update as to where we are and what we will be expecting. Scott?
Last night was the number one item on our agenda was to determine who we were going to use as the fiscal agent to operate our small grants program. And after having listening to some presentations from potential grant administrators, the group unanimously agreed that we would use the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. They're a foundation that was set up by Congress years ago and are currently operating many, as many as 35 separate conservation grants. And so that was the decision we made last night. And then we worked on some language that will go into the bill, which we had a draft that Bill Becker had started. We made some additions and changes to that. And that is going to be added in with our recommendations to use the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation as the fiscal agent.
And just for those of you who weren't there, just maybe a recap of the presentations that we heard, because we heard from the other logical sources potentially for the administration of this small grants program. Do you want to describe, Scott, just a bit about who they were and kind of what you heard from your take as the chair?
You bet. We actually had three different organizations that had a potential to administer our small grants program. One of them was the Board of Soil and Water Resources, Bowser, in connection with their Soil and Water Conservation District. And we had another presentation from the Department of Administration, from the DNR, and they kind of showed us their process. And then also Don Waggy from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. And one of the things that the group heard was that DNR's expertise was working on public lands. Bowser's expertise was working on private lands. Neither one of those were fully, but maybe not as comfortable doing the whole project. And we wanted to make sure that those organizations' technical expertise could be used in our small grant program. And so if those personnel were involved in the proposal process, it would create either a conflict or a perceived conflict of interest. And so by allowing them to be involved in the planning and the implementation of those processes, the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, as the fiscal agent, allowed for those organizations to be involved from the ground up, from the very starting point forward. And we wanted to make sure that we had access to their resources. And so that was probably the primary reason that we ended up with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation as our fiscal agent.
Any other members who were there wish to provide any other comments? Thank you, Scott. Any questions of Scott or the committee from other members of the council? So Scott and Bill, the next step is that as we move to have an appropriations bill before us on the 23rd, the recommendations of your committee then will be incorporated in terms of who would be administering that grant program, some of the specifics of the mechanics of who is eligible and the process by which that process would be administered are going to be included in the appropriation bill.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other further comments? Thank you, Scott. I know that's been a tough assignment for the committee to wrestle with who is the appropriate person particularly, and thanks for all your hard work.
We have a projected fee for operation of the grants part of that. There will be some rediscussion once we determine what the total amount of money allocated to the small grants program is. Okay? I mean, and that figure is yet to be determined. And then we will be able to nail down specifically once that dollar amount has been ascertained as to what the actual percentage of administrative cost will be administered as.
Rick?
The statutory responsibility of the council is to create a small grants program. And that is a policy decision that will go through several policy committees in both the House and the Senate. So I think we may want to look at having different bills than the appropriation bill, because you will have, you can tie that with the appropriation bill, and you can lengthen the route that we'll have to go through. And my understanding is the finance bills would need to clear their committees prior to the Easter break. So it's very limited, at least in the House, some of those committees. So I think that the charge of the council is to make recommendations on how that moves through the legislature, and they have to be in a couple bills.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Representative Hanson, this would be an appropriation as well, though, to the National Fish and Wildlife Federation, or Fishing Foundation, and language for that. So do you see that that's a distinction, or how would you reconcile or recommend that council consider that?
You can't have the appropriation without policy and the creation. So you're going to have policy decisions that are involved there that would probably take you through the Game and Fish Committee, through the Environment Committee, through the Government Operations Committee, potentially through the State Government Finance Committee, in addition to the Environmental Finance Committee, the Outdoor and Cultural Heritage Committee. In the House, I can't speak to this.
Any other questions or comments on that? Okay. Greg, you will?
Mr. Chairman, I just met in the Senate. This would be just a rider, it's a one-year program that wouldn't have any statutory language to it. I don't think that we would require something. I mean, last year and past years, the LCCMR has had a small conservation partners program that's been part of the LCCMR bill, and as far as I know, that's never gone through a policy committee in the Senate for the creation of the program.
Yep. And to add to what Mr. Knopf said, all of the instructive language is within the appropriation.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Chair, it's really up. Greg is right that I don't think this would necessarily have to go to a policy committee, but it's up to the policy chair. If they think it's a policy question, they have the right to call it into their committee. So it really would be up to Senator Chaudhry. You know, it's going to end up in the finance bill because it is an appropriation. So The policy deadlines are earlier than the finance deadline. So, you know, we could do it either way, but I guess I would prefer to keep it together and just try to have it be a finance bill. But I suspect our, you know, our whole bill could be called into the policy committee. I really don't know. I guess I haven't discussed that with the policy chair yet.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is a legislative update, so I just would defer to a legislative colleague if there's anything updated in the House and the Senate.
Well, Mr. Chair,
yeah,
the only thing I would offer is the new February forecast numbers, and have we already all seen those? I know Bill sent something out. So you probably, remember, probably already have the numbers.
Yes, we do have the numbers. I've got it in the box over here. So you've got it in front of you?
I've got it, although this was a preliminary. I don't know if you have a newer spreadsheet, Greg, that this is what I got from our fiscal analyst right away.
It would be $77,247,000.
And just to clarify, the spreadsheet that Bill sent out included that.
And we have corrected the numbers in the spreadsheet to reflect our policy with regard to establishing a 10% reserve and other pre-allocation deductions.
Rick? House File 18, there's the Mary Murphy's committee last week. There's no controversy. It will improve very fast. It is being approved today at 10:30. And I would actually encourage the council to recess during that time to actually come down to that committee and be there showing support for the first recommendation of the council. I think it would be important to show the committee, that would be the full finance committee, that the council stands behind the recommendations, and I think it would be important for the council to the flavor of the questions that legislators will have by the council. So I don't expect that it will not pass, but I think it will be a good opportunity for the council and legislature to interact with each other at 10:30 this morning.
Rick, what time was that at?
10:30.
Where
is it? I think it's in 5 or 2.
Members, what are your thoughts on that? We have a full agenda on our plate today. I suspect that if we did recess at 10:30, we would not be able to reconvene until after the House and the Senate come back from the floor sessions.
Well, Mr. Chair, just as another legislator, I think that Representative Hansen is leaving to go present the bill on behalf of the council. I think it would be pretty unfair to take any votes while he's doing that. He can't, literally can't be in two places at one time.
Other thoughts on that, Congress?
Mr. Chair, I wonder if any of the legislators can give us a sense of what the day looks like for so I have just an idea, maybe people might be able to put it together. But I know there's a joint session, if I recall.
I think the joint session, you know, I don't anticipate much this year. I think it will be pretty formal, and it's pretty laid out in our constitutional responsibilities. So I hope it goes. I hope that it goes fairly. I mean, there's certain things we do, and the timeliness of it is the oral votes.
So this chair
takes the time.
Representative Hampton, so after the joint session, do the bodies go back to their respective chambers and then continue the calendar? So both bodies would be done for the day. So an estimate would be, what do you think?
Well, we were projecting 2 o'clock or so,
yeah.
Roughly. That's a guess.
It depends on if the Regents' elections are contested too. And that is, if each member has to orally vote. The
okay. Yeah, Les.
Why don't we take Rick's suggestion and let's go down and hear the bill of the whole council?
And some support on it.
And Rick, this is the first bill up?
First bill up.
Okay, so let's plan on recessing at 10:30, and hopefully if we have enough time, we can reconvene until noon, depending on how quickly the bill moves through. All right. Let's plan on that. Okay, any other updates from the legislative front? If not, let's move on to the...
maybe just to talk about the calendar a little bit. I believe we go into Easter break on the 8th of April. So the 8th, 9th, 10th, and then I think that Monday, the following Monday's on it. So just, and that's part of where they're moving the bills through. That deadline there, not a hard deadline, the actual follow-up deadline, but the practice of getting bills moved through.
Well, Mr. Chair, my finance chair, in the Senate, we've been told that this bill, this funding bill, does not have to meet regular budget bill deadlines because it's not a regular budget bill. It's a separate fund, so it's not constrained by my, my budget for the DNR and DCA, et cetera, has to be out of my division by, I think, and we don't, this could go before or after that. I think it depends, on when we're ready to go. We intend to wrap it together with some of the other legacy bills, and so I'm not quite sure if we're going to be able to get it done before the 16th. That would be ideal, but it could be the week after that. So.
And that's where that Easter break, I mean, I'm anticipating we'll be probably working a little bit, not the full legislature, but on the weekend before trying to get some of this prepared, because you hit that gap, and then you come back and you've got the actual hard deadline. So there's just a bump there that hopefully we can be ready for.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and then Senator Representative Hansen, Senator Anderson. Obviously, I'm presuming that you would want to have the council to be involved in whatever committee hearings took place, as well as every member of whoever it is that is recommended for the seat of the funds. So I guess in part I'm just saying that council members to be aware of when things are on the schedule and whatever notice you can get 24, 48 hours in advance, especially for folks that are driving from Perm and Scott and others, so that we can all have all hands on deck. I think it probably would be a benefit to you guys.
That's a pretty good question. Any other discussions on legislative activities? If not, I'd like to move into the primary purpose of today's meeting, which is to make some decisions on our recommendations to the legislature on fiscal 2010 appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. All 12 members did submit their recommended allocations, and the material that Bill sent out had a list of projects that received at least 7 members allocating a dollar or more to projects. And recall from the process that we agreed to back on January 12th, that we would, if a project received majority support from the council, it would show up on this sheet that Bill has circulated to us. It includes 15 projects that have allocated the average amount from our council of approximately $56 million. So what I'd like to do today is use that worksheet as a beginning point to talk about the projects that we want to recommend for funding as well as the amount. And I guess I just want to say as well that, in total we received over 80 proposals, $250 million worth of project funding. And it was a tough choice, and I know personally it was really hard because there were a number of great proposals. And I guess for those who might not have received the funding, or at least not showing up high on the list, and ultimately might not be recommended for funding this session, in eight more short months, we will be here making our second set of recommendations for an additional $75 to $80 million of an appropriation. So this is not the only opportunity. But with that, I guess what I would like to do is take a vote, get a motion on the table to adopt this worksheet. And this worksheet is the one that is up on the screen right now that Beth has. It's the one that lists on a single page the projects that receive allocations from 7 or more members. And there are 15 of those, starting with the P9 at the top, and it goes down to the one project that received allocation from 7 members, P17, and then there are 13 projects in between. So I'd like a motion on it to at least adopt as a starting point this worksheet.
Make that motion.
Okay, we have a motion.
Bill? Clarification for members. The title on the sheets is requests receiving an allocation from a majority of LOHC members. It is the only chart that is not stapled together. There should be the last one in the packet.
Thank you, Bill. So we have a motion on the table to adopt this sheet, this spreadsheet, as our basis for discussion on our recommendations on funding projects for from the 2010 Outdoor Heritage Fund. Any discussion on that motion, Rick?
It's a process question. So we adopt the spreadsheet, and then we would go through each line item and discuss that. And then if members have an amendment that they want us to make, they could do that there, and then that would be what we're done.
Yes, Rick, my thought was that once we get this on the table through a motion, the second order of business would be to look at the 15 projects or programs and get an agreement that we at least want to fund those at some level and then go through those and decide what that funding level is. And then, of course, if there are other projects that are not on this list that council members feel really are high priority in conservation need, but for some reason didn't show up, we can talk about that and move those projects. Yes, sir.
And do we know or do we believe that each of the proposers of these are here so that there could be additional testimony if we have questions?
Just looking around the room, I see a number of folks here whose projects are on this list, so I think that's a fair assessment.
Bill? Another question, Mr. Chair, is that the amount, total amount here that I understand is 56,577, is that correct?
That's an average allocation, that's correct. So we have remaining a little more than $12 million of unallocated dollars that we need to talk about today.
That was my next question, so we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, that will be part of that discussion. For example, if this council agrees that these 15 should be funded at some level, I think there are some serious questions about the level of funding for some of these projects, either above or below, so we need to make some adjustments there, which could either increase that balance or decrease that balance.
Bill? And procedurally, we've asked Ms. Beth Carlson to join us. She's going to operate the PC and project on the screen what the running total is. And we have an allocation target of
$68,652,000. Thank you. Bob?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Becker. Bill, I think that's the Representative Hanson question. On Friday, you sent out this information on the list card to anyone who was interested. This was on there, correct? So there's...
That's correct.
So everyone, Apple Notice out there.
Apple Notice, everyone should have seen the spreadsheet and the allocation. Any further discussion on that motion to adopt this spreadsheet as a point of discussion for our recommendations? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, we have this spreadsheet before us. I guess the next order of business I'd like is just to have a motion to recommend, again, without regard to the amount of money, the 15 projects that are listed here that received allocation from a majority of members, that we agree as a council that these projects should receive some allocation, and then we can proceed to talk subsequent to that, the amount that would be appropriate. So motion to recommend allocation from the Outdoor Heritage Fund in fiscal 2010 money for these 15 projects that are on the spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none.
Oh, excuse me. My question is on F7, the DNR forestry course for the future. And that was the $42,700,000 request. So by adopting this motion, are we committing to that? Or I know that they have some desires in terms of two-year appropriations and that, but I'm willing to support the motion if it continues the discussion, but I also know that there are some big questions relating to that large amount. We're committing to that, so that's any part of this motion, or just continuing the debate.
It's my understanding, my intent, that it would be continuing the debate, that we would agree that these projects would be recommended for funding, but then the question is how much. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so we have the spreadsheet with these 15 projects that the council is recommending for some level of funding. I guess at this point, I would open it up to council members. I know you've had this information since Friday in terms of the recommended allocations, and I would just open the discussion up to the appropriateness of the amount that has recommended. Again, the amount that is showing up as the average LLC allocation is simply that. It's an average of the allocations made by individual council members in that process that we agreed to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I'm having, and I haven't had a chance to figure this out myself over the last 2 days, is for each of these dollar amounts that we're proposing, or I should refer to the original request versus the recommended average amount, how long will these be funded for? And I guess the question relates to especially to capacity for these different organizations, whether they're state, federal, or whatever, or private. You made a reference to the fact that, well, if you didn't make it, you can come back next year. I guess we really need to be clear about how long each of these projects are expected to take and how long they could go given the amount that we're recommending initially. And I know that'd be a little time consuming to ask each group to report on that, but I for one would like that information.
Okay. Any further thought on that request? So the request is that we would get a sense, and recall as these proposals were presented to us, we asked a number of those questions regarding is this in addition to what your normal workload is as a question of a supplement versus a plan, but also the ability to actually move on these projects, the shovel readiness of these.
Mr. Chair, which was one of the criteria for the collaborative efforts that was led by DNR and TPL and others.
That's that recall. That's correct. That's correct.
Bill? I'm not sure that this answers your question, Senator Anderson, but the bill that we will look at has the money available for three fiscal years, which enables one full field season. So that's designed to accommodate the restoration and enhancement projects. The protection or acquisition projects can close at any time, generally speaking.
Well, Mr. Chair, what I'm really getting at, I understand that the projects in front of us we're assuming are all ready to go and have the capacity to do this. I think we've already established that. The question is, are they going to be back in a year or will they be back in 2 years? That's what I want to know. You know, are we sort of setting up a process whereby the same groups might all be coming back a year from now and requesting more money? That would be really important information to know.
Bob?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I don't know that we could, I would not have an expectation that they would commit to that. It might be of interest, but I don't have an expectation that any one of these organizations would be able to say with certainty that they would not come back. Many of them are in the business of taking advantage of opportunities that occur. And in some respects, we're asking them to predict the future, and I don't know how much confidence we can necessarily
part of the process is going to be the audit, the scientific and the monetary audit, and I think this is going to be an ongoing function on each and every one of the projects. So I don't think that we can really answer that question, but as we're getting into the process, we'll be able to see are they accomplishing what they need to do, and if they haven't accomplished it in the 3-year period, they'll probably lose that money as part of the appropriation.
Bill, do you want to just kind of reiterate what you just told me to the council about kind of the reality of where we are with this next set of recommendations this council being forward?
The recommendations to the FY10 legislature are due January 15th of 10, which means that requests will have to come into us probably October of 9. That being said, I think it would be difficult to come in again unless you spend a good share of your money in 3 months. It's not an answer to your question, but it certainly gives you some flavor of what's occurring here.
Yeah, open more if they didn't get the full funding for the request. If they requested $5 million, it looks like you get some $2 million. Obviously, they have $3 million continuing needs, so presumably they might want to petition the council again for that.
I mean, certainly, the projects that are acquisitions through either fee simple title or easements, there'll be some progress made on those. But on the restoration work, given the money is not available until August 15th, my guess is that there'll be very little restoration or enhancement work that has been completed by the time we're looking at the next year's appropriations. See?
Me, you know, when we put out our request for proposal or however we handle this next year, we're going to ask the question about where are you at with existing money. If it is a fish barrier that's under contract, that money is going to be spent, and we don't have any issue doing another area where if someone's talking about acquisition and they haven't found the first piece of property and purchase, is going to be a different issue, and we're just going to have to treat them all individually when we get to where we know what we want to do next year.
Rick? My question is a little bit different than the same time, but I'm going to ask you because we know that last year we did a bonding bill that funded similar projects. I believe we provided $9 million for Forest Legacy, which hasn't been obligated a year later. And so there are certain things with the way the Department of Natural Resources operates in terms of having to receive the green light statutorily before they can start work on some of these projects. The projects that are in front of us are primarily acquisition. There are a few that are restoration, but primarily both in the number of projects and in the amount of money that's acquisition, which is the transaction. I think there will be questions as the bill moves through the legislature about when there's acquisition, will there be restoration after the acquisition. Because the legislature in the past has put 5% or 10% of Senator Anderson has to help me on that, saying Wonders acquisition for the restoration component related to that. So my capacity question, you know, I know that each of these entities have come to us saying they can do it. But there's a lot of money in addition to their existing tasks. I do know that W3, the Bowser one, they've got willing landowners right now that are lined up from last time. And so I think capacity is there, and I think we could go up to the 13 million. And it would be in the ground or done with acquisition and restoration probably by the time it's done. I'm not as confident as some of the other ones. I think the trout are limited line results, and that's a restoration, and there's a capacity there to get stuff done. I think that they could put in and have it done. Some of the others I'm not as sure of. The other question that I think legislators have is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Fund is the built responsibility for taking care of by the federal government. The acquisition that has within the state built responsibility for that.
So, Ellen, I guess getting back to your question, are there specific projects that you would, I think we have most of the principles here for the proposals that are on this sheet.
from what you heard in the discussion over the last 10 minutes, are there particular ones that you have a question about that you would like them to come up and speak to?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe if there's anyone who has better notes than I do, they can just tell me what they think. I mean, whatever's the fastest way. I just want to, I'm not asking for commitments that people won't come back. That's not really what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about how long will it take them to do what they're projecting to do. And I know some of them say that in their projects and some don't. So, you know, Mr. Chair, you made the statement that those who didn't get funded can come back next year, and that's kind of what triggered it in my mind. Well, is there, will we have the same group coming every year, or will we have sort of a whole new set of players that are likely to move up to place next year is the question, and I know we can't answer that completely today, but at least we can have a sense of whether the, you know, whether some of these projects are 2 or 3 year projects or some of them are 1 year projects. And I agree that this summer not much is going to happen if the money doesn't even come in until August.
My view on that is that we're going to spend the summer developing a strategic vision for what we want to accomplish. And I would argue we want to do it region by region so we know long term, 25 years, this is what we'd like to see accomplished. And that will frame the request for proposal strategy for next year, which will undoubtedly make the types of projects we're looking at and the areas the projects are in and the mix between restore, enhance, and protect different. So I would guess, Ellen, that we're going to see something very different next year. Some of the same players doing some of the same work, maybe in different places, and new players having to pick up where they're not capable of doing it based on what we come up with as a vision for what we want it to be accomplished.
Well said. I think that's exactly right. That obviously is out of necessity. We put together a process, and it will likely change. It'll be more strategic, more focused as we have a little bit more time to put together our RFP for the fiscal 2011 appropriation recommendations. I would say, Ellen, that in response to your question, as we move through some of these, and you have questions, or other members for that matter, about the ability to move through and accomplish these tasks that they said that they can do, I'd say we need to make sure we are clear as a council that if they're asking for $2 million for restoration, that in fact that $2 million can occur in a timely manner, that they have projects lined up to expend that money for those habitat development projects.
Okay. I'd like to hear from DNR Wildlife on the various projects.
Is there someone from DNR Wildlife? Dennis, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. So you heard the question, Mr. Simon, about the ability, if an allocation was made to the amount we have here, whether or not in the area of wildlife management area acquisition and enhancement restoration work that could be accomplished.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the Council, Department of Natural Resources has got a prioritized list of willing sellers. We have 98 people on the list right now. What we did is we took a look at those parcels and we allocated them based on their habitat type so that they're primarily wetland, primarily prairie, primarily forest, or kind of a combination of all of those so that we could mix and match those with the various proposals that are in front of you. We've got about 13 parcels right now that are in various stages of either being appraised or in the works already, even though we don't have funding for all of those. So we feel real confident that for the $5.6 million that we requested, that we could close the deals on those parcels or other parcels that we've got in the priority list, depending on landowner acceptance of our offers, within 18 months to 2 years with no problems.
And Mr. Simon, that would also apply to the request for the grassland management, the AMAs, or AW wildlife management areas for both the wetlands and the grasslands.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
A question on the aquatic management areas. The request was for $12 million. Is that something that you have the capacity to do?
Mr. Chair, the department has the capacity to do about $20 million worth of land acquisition a year at its very top. That's all funding sources, bonding and gift and our regular acquisition funds. With the aquatic management area, the wildlife management area prairie, and wildlife management area wetland, plus our normal day-to-day activity, we would be just right at our maximum. We feel we can do it.
Rich? That brings up a point that with your existing staff.
That's correct. Mr. Chair, we did add into our proposal about half an FTE per proposal for temporary assistance to our existing permanent staff, and that's primarily to do the paperwork and make sure that we keep everything flowing in our process.
Bob? I'm sorry, Senator Anderson.
Okay, thank you. And of course, the budget, as you know, members, is going to cut to the DNR, as it is for every state agency. So just keep that in mind. When you said that $20 million is about what you could handle in all departments, were you including forestry, or is that you're talking about that separately?
Chair Senator Anderson, no, that's just for the Division of Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you.
We have, in the Constitution, of course, we have the definition of how the funds can be used for clean water activities, protection, restoration, enhancement of our water. Would you say that the activities on our AMAs would, in your judgment, qualify for that definition?
Mr. Chair, I'm not as familiar with our list of AMA acquisitions. I don't know if there's anybody in here from, oh, there he is right there. Mike Duvall is with us, and he's more familiar with the aquatic management area acquisitions.
I'm sorry to ask this, Mr. Duvall.
Yes, please, Mr. Duvall.
And I apologize. Just a question.
Yeah, Mr. Duvall, the Constitution.
Could you take chair, please?
The Constitution has 33% of the receipts being deposited for clean water funds to be spent for protection, enhancement, and restoration of water quality of lakes, rivers, and streams. Would you judge that some of the work of the done on AMAs would meet that definition?
You would certainly get clean water benefits from aquatic management areas.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, I raised that issue as a point to say that there's an opportunity potentially for the council to consider, as part of our statutory obligation, to consider possibly recommending to the legislature that whatever we don't fund, for example, of AMA funding, could conceivably be considered by the legislature to be funded through the Clean Water Funds. And obviously, they're going to do the legislature's going to do what they want to do, and but I think it's not unreasonable to consider this. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Rick?
You have to sign the disclosure. Right, you go back to script. On the Victoria's Prairie Grassland WMA acquisition, is there any of those projects, are there any of those projects that have a unique scientific benefit where they have say Western Prairie Plains Orchid or some other endangered or threatened species that is in danger of being lost? Do you have any like an environmental benefit index of ranking of those acquisitions where ramping of the purpose is different to WMA is an SMA, if they're just trying to go back to the book here in terms of things looking at the statewide conservation plan, if we were not able to fund everything, there are certain ones that we would feel are really important that must be funded before they're going to be lost.
Sure. Representative Hansen, the list of prioritized acquisitions that we have, if I remember right, there's only one of those parcels that has existing native prairie on it. degraded, heavily grazed pasture. Never been tilled. We feel that we can bring that one back to the management of fire and protection. Most of the rest of the parcels are all have all been tilled at some time in the past, so these were, would be restoration or enhancements of existing pieces of land that we already own that are more planted to exotic grass lines like bone grass. So we would essentially nuke those grass fields and come in and plant them with the mixture of purchasing occurred seed. So I guess to answer your question, there's one or maybe two that would be pretty high priority for us from a protection standpoint, but most of them are all about equal in the restoration.
And then the cost of just having two, do you have those been appraised? Are they ready to go? Are they further down the queue?
Yeah, I have to rely on my memory, but I think one of those is in the process right now of being appraised. The other one is just has been offered by the landowner. We've made a new one.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Simon, do you know what if the the DNR has the budget now to restore and manage the WMA and the AMA? And the acquisition, those are the two acquisition programs here, the AMAs and the federal AMAs that are proposed here for acquisition.
Mr. Chair, at least for the WMA, the Wildlife Management Area acquisitions, we built in development dollars, initial site development dollars for those new acquisitions into our prairie enhancement proposal. So those two are linked together. The aquatic management areas, For the most part, and again, I'll have to speak for Mr. Duvall, when we acquire an aquatic management area, there's usually not much development that needs to be done on those. It's mostly a protection of shoreline and critical fish habitat. So the development needs there are quite a bit less than what we have on the prairie and wetland sites.
So Mr. Simon, just to clarify, because that's a great question, that if, for example, we were to fund the request of the WMA acquisition at half the level, if we were to fund it at the full level, you would really need that full restoration request in order to accommodate all of those acquisitions and to restore them to either their wetland condition or their prairie grassland condition. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, our estimate from based on quite a number of years of experience is that we need about $150 per acre of land acquired to do the initial site development, cover the bare ground with the prairie grass seed mixture. And that's nothing too fancy. It's not a lot of wetland, big wetland structures. It's just cover the bare ground and get things in good shape as a unit in the outdoor recreation system. So we would need some portion of the prairie enhancement and development money, but we wouldn't necessarily need it all just to do the initial development on the acquisition.
Any other questions for Mr. Simon?
But on that point, you do have properties that probably need restoration that are existing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson, that's correct. We have built a list of polygons within our coverage of land ownership that are, again, in usually old bone grass and exotic grasses that we would like to convert.
Regenerative
grass is a good one.
Mr. Chair, you have a quick follow-up on the aquatic management area. Could you just refresh the committee and the folks just on the locations where some of these AMA acquisitions would be?
The AMA acquisitions and representative are statewide. They're lakeshore, they are riverine, and they are scouts communities. So it's a collection of a number of those. I believe there's a table attached to the proposal that indicates the list of projects that we have at priorities.
Any other questions on that point? Thank you. If not, I'd like to go back, members. We've got a list in front of us, and we've agreed at some funding level for these 15 projects. Ellen, please.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to also ask the DR Forestry question or two about the forest for the future proposal coming.
Great. Mr. Peterson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson. We heard a lot about how the land that's available is sort of, you know, take the whole thing or don't take any of it. And so tell us how the proposed recommendation for $16,950,000 would work in terms of acquiring the forestry land that we talked about in this proposal.
Sure, Mr. Chair. We've had considerable discussions with the landowner over the last couple of weeks. The funding request that we initially proposed, we think, is still the value that we want to sit with. We have not had an opportunity to discuss value with them in terms of a price. That price may fluctuate depending on the negotiations. But in terms of the appropriation of 16.9, we feel that would be short of what we would need over a two-year period. Landowner has been receptive to our recommendation or our idea that we fund this or we pay this out over 2 years. And we feel that there's a good opportunity if funding were available over 2 years that we could complete this project within 2 years. Obviously, if full funding was available, we could complete this, I think we mentioned last time, we could complete this project at the end of this calendar year.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, if we were to go ahead with this recommendation and it wasn't enough to purchase the land, what would you do with the money? Would it just kind of sit there while, and you hope that we added more to it next year, but you wouldn't be able to move forward with it until we did? Or do you think it would allow you to go and keep negotiating and see if you can work out some kind of an option on the land?
Sure, Mr. Chair. We think in order for a successful option to be negotiated with the landowner, we would have to have some assurance that full funding would eventually be available. An option, obviously, is the ideal scenario that would encumber the landowner to complete the project. Without the assurance of full funding, I'm not sure that the landowner would be willing to sign an option. We may, if funding were just made available for this first appropriation of 16.9, the landowner may sit on an option until next year at this time, until the results of 2011 appropriations were made. During that time, obviously, that land is vulnerable. The landowner could do any number of things with that land. But I think the position of the landowner, that is a smaller one, I think we've taken that seriously. And the flexibility that the landowner has shown has been to move away from all of the money at closing the first year to a consideration that they'd be willing to consider payment over a two-year period. So I think they've shown some flexibility there.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear in my own mind, so the land is not divisible. It's $187,000. It's not something we can cut in half or anything along those lines. Is that correct?
That's correct. And in fact, the appraisal was not done with the idea that it was be done in phases. It was done with the idea that it was a single acquisition.
And then, Mr. Peterson, do you have a sense of kind of what the option threshold amount would be? If it's not 16, would they sign an option? I'm not obviously holding you to this, but just to give the council some general sense of 18 to 20. Do you know if there'd be a threshold amount?
Well, I think over 2 years, we're still looking at the original amount of close to $20 million each year. The $40 million that we, or thereabouts, I think we requested just over $41 million. But that number obviously is still uncertain. We have no certainty of the private funding that would make up the balance of this acquisition.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, just to, I'm sorry, my question wasn't clear enough. If the legislation were to give you $20 million, in your judgment, would that be sufficient for them to sign an option to wait for another year on the hope that we might get the remainder, whatever that number would be? Is it 29, 22 million, 18? I'm trying to get a sense of where you think their option threshold might be.
I think the higher the number, the closer the certainty that we're going to have.
We'd like a forester to go out on a limb.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, I've got two letters here. One of your proposal of the two payments. The other is a letter to Representative Solberg stating that general obligation bonds could be used in this method also. I think this council is going to have to make a commitment, a full commitment, with funding then to be determined. If we can only fund 16, 17 million this year, but I think the commitment that you're looking for is a full commitment over a period of time. Am I correct in that?
Ideally, we'd have a full commitment that would enable us to close on or about June of next year. With the first payment to be made at that time, the second payment to be made fairly soon after that, but within a year, possibly within 6 months. That's, I think, the ideal scenario, or the scenario that we've discussed most recently with the landowner, and the scenario that they seem to be willing to support.
Bob was really zeroing in on my question that you know, the $20 million would secure the deal for 2 years if we bumped it up to that. And at some point, I'd like to make a motion that we do indeed that.
Is that a motion?
All right. I'll move that.
Okay, so we have a motion then to increase the allocation that we have right now of $16,950,000 to $20 million. Any discussion on that motion?
I think you'll find that some skepticism. People come into the legislature all the time. The once in a lifetime opportunities that we have to move quickly on and accept their office. It happened last year with Lake Vermillion, $20 million. It's not done yet. $20 million is a lot of money. And we could be funding a lot of restoration, a lot of work elsewhere in the state, rather than a big even proposal, which is what we're working on.
Dave?
I'm curious where else you look for money besides us and the two contributions you have, or places that you have. What other sources are you looking for? What are you doing beyond assuming we're the only game in town? Sure, Mr. Chair, members. DNR in and of itself is not seeking private funding. The Conservation Fund has been very active on behalf of this project in going to private foundations and have certainly provided some very promising numbers towards this project. I guess I'm not directly involved with those negotiations. Tom Duffus from the Conservation Fund is here and can probably speak directly to those private fundraising efforts, but certainly the numbers that we talked about are significant, are a significant contributor to the total value.
Is DNR looking at funding? Are they talking to the clean water people? Or are you having any discussions anywhere except with us?
To date, we have not looked at the clean water. Obviously, we're in the same position that the rest of the world is. We don't know the process for looking there. This project certainly does have clean water benefits, and this will be that could be one of the things that we can look at.
Great. What about the unobligated bond funds?
Sure, Mr. Chair. We have currently just over $3 million. I think you might have mentioned $9 million earlier. That's, I believe, incorrect. We received $3 million during 2008. And if you recall back when I was first here, we talked about shovel-ready projects. We have actually two shovel-ready projects. We have another 76,000-acre project that is shovel ready in the sense that the appraisal is completed, it's under review, and if funds were available, we could probably close on that very quickly as well. So currently, that project was in the loop much earlier. Although we haven't encumbered that money towards that project, we had committed that $3 million in bonding and just a little bit of unspent bonding from previous years towards that 76,000-acre project. And in addition to that, we also have some federal dollars committed to that project.
Wait.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if there's any benefit to going through this process of starting with the first one and getting our action done on number T9 and then working through the system so we keep them in order. But some of those ones that may be on the top where we're already looking at additional funding, possibly, there might be some of those other ones on the top end that we want to also consider.
Wayne and members, we certainly can do that. We do have a motion right now from Darden that we discussed that would increase that appropriation to $20 million. But after that, we can certainly go right to the top and move down if you'd like. Ellen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another comment on Darden's motion. I agree with Rick. I think there will be some skepticism in the legislature, even though I know there's a lot of support for this proposal. We'd like to see it happen and move forward. But I think it's pretty clear what we're hearing is that whatever amount of money we put out there is probably just going to sit on the table till next year. It's not going to get spent. And so that's something we need to think about. And it's also pretty clear that I don't think Dick's going to be able to get an option unless we have an ironclad commitment that we're going to come up with the rest of the money. That's what we're hearing. And I don't know, are we going to make that commitment here? Are we going to start binding ourselves? Are we going to put some language in there in the bill that says we intend to fully fund this in 2 years? Because if we don't, I have a feeling that we haven't heard the end of this and that we're not going to have any certainty. And, you know, frankly, in today's market, you know, I think we ought to be smart buyers. And I know, I'm sure you're being a smart negotiator. I'm not discouraging the negotiating efforts that are going on. It's just that we need to be realistic and think about, you know, how many developers are waiting in line to buy that land right now? Probably not a lot. So I'm not really recommending, I'm not sure what we should do, honestly, but I think we really need to seriously think about the downsides of what we're proposing. So I'm not sure that adding more money is, I guess I'm speaking against the motion, but I support it as is, as recommended by the members, and I'll support that, but I'm not sure that adding more money is going to get us out of this problem.
Mr. Peterson, could you respond?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, again, I didn't say that we could get a option if we had $20 million. I also said I didn't say we couldn't. So I think there's I think the owners or the local managers that are representing the owners in Finland are watching this very closely. They're looking at the type of commitment that we're willing to make as a state, as a council, as a legislature, and I think they have indicated that they would have a very quick response once they saw what was on the table, I guess. So I think there's you're right. I don't know that we would close. We couldn't close on half of the deal currently just because of the way the appraisal is structured. The appraisal was not structured as a two-part transaction. It was structured as a one-part transaction. But we could certainly still close if the funding were, if the remainder of the funding was available a year from now. We could close within a year with certainty that the remainder would be spent within however much time it took for the remaining money to be available.
Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess the options I think we should consider would be either, you know, put a chunk of money in there and let it ride for a year, or say once and for all, we support this, we're going to come up with $40 million and promise we're going to do that. You know, we can set the timing of when we're going to do that as 2 years or 3 years, but I think we need to do one or the other, and I don't think the sort of incremental, I'm thinking poker right now, you know, bidding, trying to bid a little higher. I don't think that's going to quite get us there. I think it's sort of, we should do all or nothing. Well, not nothing. We should do all or just sort of let it ride and see what happens.
Bob? Mr. Chair, I'm not in favor of letting it ride. I think this is an opportunity that we can't let pass by. I would suggest that perhaps if Darby would consider a friendly amendment to the motion along the lines of a $20 million commitment from the fund at this point, with a recommendation to the legislature to consider using second fiscal year's proceeds, amount to be determined based on negotiation by DNR with the sellers, to determine what that additional amount might be, and that the council's recommendation would reflect something along those lines. I don't know, Darby, if that makes sense to you or not.
Yeah, I would accept that.
I would second that also, Darby, but let's remember the process here. We've got 188 million acres that we can sell in a perpetual easement with access and preserving an industry. I think it's a very opportune time to do that. Developing that property is not going to sustain the jobs for the industry, and the access of the sportsmen in the state of Minnesota will be perpetual. So I think it's I think we need to make that commitment.
Wayne. Darby and Bob, I appreciate your measure of acceptance and friendly amendment, but I'm wondering, because the request is here and it is not somewhere else, that maybe we shouldn't consider, it sounds like we want to, we're looking at full funding, recommend the full funding from this council with 50% in fiscal year 2010, and 50% in fiscal year 11, and at least let us start here, and if there's some other money that comes on in the meantime, we can set the fence.
And Wayne, my interpretation is that, in fact, what that amendment would do, that friendly amendment, would be to commit $20 million in fiscal 10 within the language of the appropriations bill, a commitment to fully fund this project subject to successful negotiation and closing of the deal by, let's say, June 30th of 2010.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and Wayne, I don't have an expectation that $20 million is 50%. I have an expectation that $20 million is 100%.
Yeah, we
Mr. Chair, I want to be clear. I understand what this amendment says. Does it say $20 million this year and $20 million next year, or does it say $20 million this year and next year, whatever price you decide on, we're going to fund the second half? I mean, which one are you proposing?
And it's the latter. Mr. Chair, I'd like to keep open. I don't want to set a dollar amount because that's where the negotiation will end. I want the DNR to work very hard and the sellers sharpen their pencils. And if you have an approach that will allow us to negotiate better, I'd love to hear it. But I think we share that same interest.
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, that's my main concern. I mean, if you just have a blank check and say we're committed to a blank check, I think it doesn't put us in the driver's seat in the negotiations. I don't know how to do it differently. I mean, we had that problem with Vermilion State Park. The same issue arose, you know. Whatever we appropriate, the price sure isn't going to go below that, and it's likely to go higher.
So, Ellen, and I guess this is a question to Mr. Peterson. Could you just clarify where you are in the appraisal? I mean, to that point, that very point, that anything we do today, how that might affect the final negotiation of the price of this agreement?
I have to answer on this pretty lightly. Mr. Chair, the appraisal has been completed, so we have an indication of value, and what we currently don't have is a negotiated price with the landowner. So there's some uncertainty over what the final price will be, and there's also some uncertainty what the final private funds will be. Once we know those two elements, which would have been nice to know today, but unfortunately we don't know those today, but I think that will allow for more exact appropriation numbers, but so sufficiently vague?
So, Mr. Peterson, we are going to have a bill before us in 2 weeks on the 23rd of March. At that time, will we know what that appraised value that easement is? Will that become public at that time?
Mr. Chair, it will not. The appraised value is protected information under the Landowner Bill of Rights. Once an option has been secured, we would have more public information. Obviously, the landowner could provide that information, but it's unlikely they would. I think part of the timing issue that we're dealing with here is that the local owner or the local managers will bring forth our offer to their board later this month, but it will be after your next meeting, unfortunately. So, again, we've had sufficiently good discussions with the landowner regarding, generally regarding value and expectations, and I think we're optimistic that given what we've requested, we could get the deal done.
Scott? Historically, in negotiations that you've done in the past, have you been able to secure those properties for a figure at or right on or near the appraised price?
Yes. Generally speaking, we have some latitude, and I think I presented information at the last time that at least in the Forest Legacy Program, somewhere on the order of half or more have been negotiated at a bargaining price. A couple have been over the appraised value. So we have some latitude. Obviously, there's every transaction is different, and there's no certainty about where we'll end up, but there are obviously some limits beyond which we will not go.
Wayne?
It appears we're just looking for some language associated with this that protects the funding we're going to be proposing. I wanted to spend 50% of the projected value in 2010 with the negotiated balance in fiscal year 11. Is that going to give us some opportunity to let them do the negotiations and then whatever the balance is we'll come up with?
I'm not sure I'm following.
Well, what I'm saying is we're talking about coming up with a set dollar amount. Right now we have a price on here of 42.7, and if we said that we're just going to be funding this at 50% of the projected value now with the negotiated balance due in the next fiscal year. That way we don't know what the balance is going to be.
So I guess I would defer to our House and Senate Council colleagues about in writing an appropriations bill, whether you can do that without specifying a specific dollar amount.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I don't think you're talking about appropriating money in the second year. Maybe you are. Maybe some people are thinking that way. But it would seem to make more sense at this point in time, since you don't know the amount. The total amount would be to put some language in there that just kind of gives this project some clearance now to come back next year. And that way you'd have a chance to review the negotiated settlement before appropriating the money. But it would be more appropriating the money for this fiscal year and then putting some language in saying that basically you're intending this to be an installment payment for the full project, and that way it gives. I would think that it would give the private company the chance to, or the knowledge that they have some access to this group next year, and give you a chance to review. I don't think appropriating the money for the next year without knowing the dollar amount would be difficult.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, just a clarification. On the appraisal price, you're looking at the land value. The easement price is going to be something much different than that.
Mr. Chair, no. What we have as a certified value is the easement value. in order to derive that, they have a before and after. The before value is the land value. So that number is known as well.
Scott? If the council had ended up with a motion that said we were going to fund half of your proposal now with a recommendation to fund the other half next year, and if the figure ran long, you would just be responsible to try to cover that difference? I mean, would that be an acceptable option for us? I mean, if it's $4 million more, okay, then obviously you would have to go through some other sources. You would be the one ultimately signing the easement with them. Could we do that and limit our exposure that way? I mean, fund it to what we think is the full amount, 42.7. Give them 21,350 this year with a recommendation for 21,350 next year. And then if the option price runs down, just allow forestry to go about finding the additional funds elsewhere.
Mr. Chair, again, I think based on our preliminary request, we think the funds that we requested were in the neighborhood of what we would need in addition to whatever private fund would be available. So that might work. I think the more certainty we have on the full appropriation, I think the more comfortable the landowner would be to signing an option on the entire property.
Dave?
Well, I just would like to question whether or not the motion could be amended to the $20 million and then incorporate Greg's language for how to give our direction of sort of a, this would be a first priority for us, but we have a last look in terms of the price. To me, that gives you the negotiating, it gives the company the understanding that if they're unreasonable, we're not going to just fall down and do whatever they want in the negotiations, but it clearly sends a message that we're interested in the project. We want it to succeed. Does his language fit with where you're at in terms of negotiating and making comfortable? The Greg language.
Mr. Chair,
I know you'd be more comfortable if we just gave you $49,000, but that aside,
I think I'd like to see that.
Mr. Chairman, I answer that. My name is Craig Engelon. I'm the Northeast Regional Director who's been working on this project quite a bit. I'm sorry to interrupt. But what I can say is that I believe we'll have a firm number soon, and this bill is not going to shape the negotiations. What's happening is we've had a certified appraisal. We discussed with the local folks here. I feel we made great progress on the eight specific price, but they've got to take that back to the board in Finland at the end of this month, and that's what's causing uncertainty. So I think we could have a hard number by the April 1st. Well, before then, that would be an agreed to price. So there is an uncertainty going into the future about what those negotiations will be. The company will agree to a specific number before April 1st, or they'll pass.
That's very helpful. Let's see, Darden.
Yeah, I just reiterate really what Bob has said in his family amendment, modified by Greg's comments. That makes sense. I think it really is important that we make a very firm, solid commitment here that so that they know we're serious. We're not just, well, maybe kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is Jeff and Bob. We're going to meet on that, I guess, on the 16th and then again on
probably the 23rd.
Because right. I don't think the 23rd is on the 30th.
So if need be, yes.
Mr. Ringwald and the DNR can come back and give us a report perhaps at that point and we can refashion things if at all necessary. I hate to do that to Bill, but we need to do that.
Bill, could you restate the motion so that we're clear on what we're voting on?
The amendment is to increase Project S7 to $20 million in fiscal year 10 with a commitment to fund the balance in fiscal year 11 as per the language of Mr. Knott.
So, Mr. Chair, what we'd be actually voting on is a $24 million proposal, more or less. Not literally, because we're not appropriating next year's money. We're not proposing that. But I just think members need to think about this carefully. Because we're committing ourselves to another $20 million next year, more or less, if we do that. And it's just by far, you know, the largest amount. We're kind of doubling every, you know, what we started out with.
I'm not tracking on the 24. Where does it?
Well, we're adding $4 million to what we recommended complete, plus adding another $20 million next year. So we're, you know, right now members have recommended $16 million for this project. That's what we walked in with today, right? 17. And so this motion is asking for us to add on to that another 23, 24 million, more or less. I mean, I know we're not proposing spending the money in the second year right now, but we're committing to that. So we're committing to spending another $23 million of LOHC, of Habitat funds, in this motion. So we just need to think about it carefully. This is by far the biggest, you know, it just really overshadows everything looking at here. So I just want members to understand that it's going to limit what we do next year as well. And I think, you know, it would be nice to be able to point to some marquee projects that we're doing. So I can certainly see the arguments in favor of it. But I think the legislature is going to scrutinize this very, very carefully.
Any further discussion on that motion?
I would just point out that this is an easement at $300 an acre or less. I mean, you can't get much more marquee than that in terms of permanent protection of the forests in the state with public access for $300 an acre at the full price. It's pretty amazing to me.
We have a motion. Any further discussion?
I request a roll call.
Okay, a roll call vote has been requested. Any further discussion on that motion? Not. Take the roll, please.
Senator Anderson?
Aye.
Councilor Bench?
Aye.
Councilor Cox?
Aye.
Councilor Inger?
Aye.
Councilor Gunther?
Aye.
Councilor Hanson?
No.
Councilor Hartwell?
Yep.
Senator Ingebretson?
Aye.
Chair?
Yes.
Councilor Nelson?
Yes.
Councilor Rawl?
Yes.
Councilor Schroeder?
Aye.
It is 11 to 1.
Very good. So that motion has been adopted. We have $20 million in fiscal 10 going to that project with the language as described by Greg Knopf that will be included in the bill that you will see in 2 weeks. Back to the... No, Ellen, please. I was just going to say that the suggestion was made that we can start from the top of this list and move through. And
procedural clarification, can I update this real quick?
Yes,
please. And I'll update
comments
as best I can.
Please. I'm sorry. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, before we start making motions to spend more money, I have to make some comments. I support all the projects that are recommended here for allocation, and I'm pretty sure I voted for them. I voted for them. Anyway, I voted for most of them. I appreciate what members have put together here for a proposal as a starting point, and there is some money left on the table at this point. There's kind of a big glaring omission as far as I can see, and that is a big part of the state is, you know, not one metro project was recommended for funding. Not a land acquisition, not a land restoration, not a, and that, you know, I tried to figure out why, you know, there's a lot of, and I've heard a lot of different explanations, but my concern is that it's going to be, this is going to be a huge red flag in the legislature. That and I tried to talk to some of my colleagues in the Senate over the weekend. I've gotten a little bit of feedback, but I haven't had a chance to talk to as many people that I'd like it in the short time frame. And I've gotten a pretty strong sense that senators are not going to take kindly to a proposal that doesn't have statewide geographic balance and that doesn't take into account significant areas of natural habitat in some parts of the state. And so I think we need to be cognizant of that. I really would like, if the council is going to be successful moving forward, we want this package to be supported by the legislature. And I think if we don't add something, some significant attention to the metropolitan area in this package, there's going to be amendments to this bill that are going to change it. I'm just saying that's what's going to happen. And so we need to think about that with some of the proposed money that's still available. We have an opportunity to try to restore a little bit more balance. And I think that would be a wise thing for the council to do so that we can have a package that will really stick together and get broad support from the legislature before we start adding money to some of the other proposals that are here, as good as they are.
I've really been concerned about this issue myself, and I'm just fearful that if we can't find projects, and we don't have to, cover, from 7th and Hennepin to Wabasha and Kellogg, but that's my fear. My fear, we know there's some folks in both bodies that maybe would just soon see this whole thing fail badly. And I think what we need to do is eliminate as many potential hurdles as we can. And what I did, I spent a lot of time thinking about this and working on this over the last week. And I went through the proposals and identified, realistically, a lot of the Metro proposals were parks related. They were really fuzzed in the sense of what we could legally do and not. And clearly, acquisitions are out because of the need for open hunting. And I think that eliminates a bunch of them. But there are others that I think are absolutely consistent with what we say we're all about and also happen in the metro area. And I think I would just ask that we consider those, and I can just quickly identify. I came up with five projects that had a metro component involved, and I was, we're talking about not huge amounts of money, but I think, I think we always, we have, it's been suggested that when we come up with a package that we have a big press conference, and I think that's an excellent idea. We really need to get the word out, and as a part of that press conference, we probably want a map of the state of Minnesota, and I think as we put pins in around the state, the blue ones for water products and projects, and yellow ones for ferry and so forth, we really would like a few of those pins in the metro area. I'm suggesting that we take a look at Fish and Wildlife Project 8A. That's the FMA's metro quarter. The whole issue of wildlife habitat, the focus would be on species that are in greatest conservation need. We may want to get into a discussion of what do we mean when we say we are into wildlife habitat. It seems to me that Fish and Wildlife Project 8G, again, has a conservation corridor issue. It's not associated necessarily with state, with parks, designated trout stream there. Fish and Wildlife Project 8H, sea acquisition, 685 acres of wetlands, part of the added to the National Wildlife Refuge. I mean, that goes absolutely hunting as possible there. Fish and Wildlife Project 9I, again, involving a lake project that I think it absolutely fits. When we say we're into fish habitat, by gosh, that is a fish habitat project. Yes, it is within the confines of one of the three of its parks. And lastly, Forest Project 8, this is essentially a focus on wildlife management areas and FNAs. It's supported by the turkey folks, the sharp-tailed grouse folks, who
non-Sharpville Girls folks, those five projects, I think, and there may be more, but at least those are worth at least considering as we determine to what degree we want the metro area represented. But I think it's really not simply looking just for metro, you know, looking for anything that we can approve for metro. It's, this is stuff that we say, the amendment says, or statutory language says, is what we ought to be doing.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, on that point?
Yeah, so, Mr. Chair, I understood that we had a process laid out that we would first look at the projects that got the 7 goals or more, and then based on where we land on that and the dollar amount that may or may not remain, consider further down the list. Am I correct about
That's correct.
And so, and I don't know if we voted on that process or not, but I'm encouraged to continue on that path, right? With mindful of the points both Darby and Senator Anderson made.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, looking at the next two projects on the list, metro projects, probably each one received a 6 funding. I think those are two potential projects. And I think if we look at the constitutional dictates of the funding of this 33%, I think we need to obey those constitutional dictates. And I think if we look at a lot of the metro population is using the outstate area as the playground. We put 550,000 deer hunters in the woods the first weekend of deer hunting in the northern Minnesota area and southern Minnesota area. Probably about 80% of those are coming from the metro area. Now, we also have 47% of that additional monies in parks, trails, and waters, and there's some very good projects in here that we should be looking at funding. What is your plan as far as taking these on to the clean water and parks and trails recommendations?
Mr. Chair, the parks and trails money, keep in mind that it's 15%. So it's 14%. So it's less than half the dollar amount that's available for the state. The Parks and Trails programs that we traditionally funded in the state include acquisition of land, include management of and development of the public facilities in those parks, include staffing in the parks, include capital projects for the, you know, the buildings, the bathrooms, the campgrounds, the trails, et cetera, in the park. And so there's a whole range of things that have to be funded through park budgets, and we're hoping with the additional funds to be able to enhance and expand those expenditures. But it's been pretty clearly made, the case has been pretty clearly made to us that restoration of land in those parks is very rarely, there's rarely any money available to restore the natural land in state and metro parks. That sort of drops to the bottom because those other items have to come first. And so there's certainly not an excess of money. In fact, the metro parks, by statute, the state's supposed to fund 40% of those because the remainder is paid by local property taxpayers, and they receive more, you know, statewide visits, so they've never actually gotten more than 10% under, which is a lot less than what they're supposed to get funded by law. And so, frankly, the parks don't have a lot of extra money. The parks are not really going to have the ability to add a lot of land work, and hopefully they can do some more acquisition with some of these funds and some restoration. But I think if we start taking things from this list and shifting them over to the parks money, it's going to take many, many more years for it to be funded through those streams than through this funding stream. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. The clean water program, similarly, we have a whole established set of clean water programs that have never been adequately funded. and we're going to expand them and speed them up with this new constitutional money. So we'll be able to actually meet our requirements under the Clean Water Law. We've never met them because we haven't had the money. And so we've done just a little bit of testing of our water and a little bit of establishing the TMDLs and a little bit of restoration, but we've never had the ability to do it in 10 years like we intended to. So I guess the case I'm making is that there's not a lot of extra money in those categories, so don't count on them to bail us out if we're not going to fund something they may not get funded. But some of these certainly would be eligible for those. And so, you know, the legislature will consider those, the agencies that fund the parks will consider those, absolutely. But I'm not, I think this is the largest funding source that's not designated to be spent in any particular way under existing state programs. And so I think that helps explain why people are coming to this fund. I hope that answers the question.
Wayne?
Mr. Chair, I think our task, if I recall from the council, was to take this list of projects and to identify and rank them what we believe best was description of what the intended uses were for. And when I looked through this, we have a number of projects that had zeros, that were votes, one vote, like 16, which were around 25, and only received two votes. I think the process so far has worked pretty good. The problem is we're trying to go to the bottom list and now try to find a way to do a balancing act. And I'm afraid we're getting away from what we were intending to do. And I don't know if we can properly balance it here. Just like when the arts money starts to be spent, I'm not too sure that we'll have Ballet in Virginia or War Road, Minnesota, but it should be best spent where it's going to be the most fit.
I was going to follow up on Bob's point that I think we do have a motion on the floor on the process that we were going to be doing.
That's right.
I think we can have this debate at maybe after Jeff Perry can come back and can start on, but I'm looking at a process that we use when we set budget targets or if we're moving within funds and try to, I mean, we'd all like to up each of these projects, but there's not enough money. So, and we just upped one of the projects. So maybe a process would be kind of what we do elsewhere is if we're going to raise one, we say where we're taking the money from. That might keep us in there. I think that we can, you know, with the 56.5 million with a spreadsheet in front of us, we can work through this, 59 now, sorry. We can work through this and then deal with the 10 to 12 million because there were some of those that have 5, 6, 7, and I think we can have the debate about the plan and where some things, where there may be some holes in meeting the plan. But for right now, to give us some process structure, you know, I mean, we could do something like, if we're going to add to one, where are we going to take it from? And that may not work the best, but it's a way for us to move through this spreadsheet.
So, Rick, we have that option by, we have now $9 million and some change that's unallocated. And it's my intention that as we go through this, unless we can specifically identify the motion where it comes from, that it would come from that unallocated dollar amount.
So let me be clear. So then you're assuming we will add nothing to the spreadsheet that is not on the spreadsheet. We will obligate the other nine to get to the 70 million. Is that what you're
saying? No, I'm not saying that. I am saying that we have now 15 projects before us that have some amount. And what I want to do is I want to get agreement on the level of funding for these 15 projects. And if that means at the end of that, we have $5 million left over or $9 million left over, then we need to look where else we should be going to recommend appropriations. That's what I'm saying.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that the members have already voted. They've already indicated that they want to fund these projects. At least there's 7 votes for, I think if you go through this process, then we suggest that we will not have anyone to that will be obligated and the commitments will be made. And I think that leaving some on the table to allocate some of these things to meet the conservation plan, to meet the goals that we were required to do under the statute. There are some holes in 15 projects here that do not meet this plan.
is not their pool in trying to reach that. So I would think that it would be better to, I would look at moving to increase some and decrease some.
A couple things. One, I thought we were just talking about the first 15, so I didn't feel a need to declare that I have a conflict with F8. I'm not participating in discussion with them that's put in by Audubon if that happened to be on the board, but I want to make that clear. Secondly, I want to say I think we should go through the 15 and see where we come out, and personally I think we have to find more geographic diversity, and when we're done with that, we ought to be not seeing it as a complete package, but as a package that's the first draft that we then go back in and say, whether it's Darby projects or other projects, I don't think we can exclude the metro area. I think we have to be intelligent about this as we go through. I would encourage us to take the process, some of which these I think we can take money away from. Some will probably add a little, but then as a complete package, we're going to need to say, is this fair and reasonable, and do we need to do anything else in terms of adjustments?
Ellen?
Bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, sorry, I just have to make one more comment about this. And I understand if we're going to go through the first 15 projects, that's fine before we make any other motions. I respect that. I just want to be really clear that when I talk about balance, it's not just for the sake of balance. It's about meeting our constitutional mandate. And so I really want to respond to that because I don't want anyone to be mistaken in what I'm talking about. I believe that, you know, the DNR has put some materials together that show that there's some 150,000 acres across the metropolitan area of pieces of land that have very great significant biological significance based on their species, based on their need for protection, that are not protected by any kind of legal mechanism. That's almost as much as we're talking about in this forestry package, 187,000 acres. We have at least 150,000 acres. And that doesn't even account for restoration. So I think if we somehow think it's not, I think it's wrong to, I've got too many negatives here. Under the Constitution, there are a number of pieces of land that are worthy of protection under the Constitution in the metropolitan area. And we just need to, I just want to say that because it's true and that's what I'm talking about. And it sort of mystifies me why those are being set aside. And let me just give you one example, all right? I went through these again last night and tried to understand what the reasons would be for excluding them. If you look on W23, it's listed under Anoka County Cluster Red, and that could be why it only got one vote. But if you read it carefully, which I did again, it's talking about acquiring land through the Stuart Richards that will include marsh, waterfowl, fen, some of the last remaining high-quality natural communities in the metro area based on the Minnesota County Biological Survey. It will be designated as a public conservation area, which is not the same as a park, and hunting and fishing will be allowed in it, and it's supported by the local community. I mean, how does that not qualify under the Constitution for protection? It does. Obviously, it does. And restoring forests that go along, you know, we have three of the major rivers in Minnesota, or the three biggest rivers in Minnesota converge in the metropolitan area, and that those riverways are migratory flyways that are among the most important in North America. And so it seems to me that restoring land along those flyways has significant habitat value. And so it's not, I think we're creating some kind of geographical bias to say that those don't meet the Constitution. Of course they meet the Constitution. And honestly, Darby, there's nothing in the Constitution that says if you restore some land in a park, that doesn't fit under habitat. That's just not true. But I, you know, clearly when it comes to acquisition, we are limited to hunting and fishing land if, as a general rule. There can be exceptions made. The law allows for that, but the general rule is that. But it doesn't exclude us from restoring land where you can't hunt and fish, and or where you can't hunt in every, you know, under all circumstances. So there's a number of restoration projects and a couple of acquisition projects in the metropolitan area that I think are related to high quality land. You know, there's FNA protection, acquisition and restoration. Those are, by definition, areas of land that have significant habitat value. They have endangered or threatened species and in the metropolitan area, we're talking about land that's subject to development as much as any land in the state. So it seems to me that we're not following our constitutional mandate if we ignore those. So I will defer that issue until we're done going through this, but I think members need to keep that in mind, that if we spend all the money and we don't acknowledge some of those areas that need protection, then the legislature is going to look at this package and a lot of members of the legislature are going to say, we didn't quite finish our job, and they're going to want to finish it for us. So just keep that in mind.
Thank you. Bill?
Thank you. Let me weigh in a little bit on Senator Anderson's point here with the legislature taking a buy-in here. This thing has been worked on for going on over 10 years now, and the legislature's had ample opportunity to put numbers to the amendment and the comment of not parks not having enough or arts not having enough. That's really behind us already. I'm willing to guess what the whole picture is looking at when Darby talks about putting a bit of Minnesota sign up in front of the press release. I think we ought to be waiting until all the entities are funded before we start putting our dots on there, because I think you're going to see a fairness statewide when it comes to the total constitutional amendment. So when we start talking about funding just rural projects, I think that's really kind of unfair. Like David said, we do have a process. We put a lot of work and time and effort into this. And to Ellen's point as well, we've got 24 more years to do funding in these projects. And to say that Metro is not going to be included in this, they have to be looked at. They have to be included in it. And if the standards are there, that they can be, I think this group is certainly giving them a good look. But the numbers are there. I mean, we all voted in and where we're at. So what I'm saying is that it's faithful. When you look at the whole constitutional amendment and you put the dots on the map, you're going to see a lot more fairness than what you're going to see just by the body that's been doing all the work so far, and that's the council when it comes to that constitutional amendment. So.
Noting that 5 projects with 11 votes, what I had mentioned earlier, I move to reduce the DNR aquatic management areas by $792,060 and add that so the trout unlimited to all 58.00 so that there is full funding of FGW-92.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table to reduce it. Rick, did you?
I wasn't writing as fast as you were talking.
So if you want to describe that, the numbers again,
you're reducing from
AMA,
the AMA, 792,060.
Okay.
And adding that to the 1,258,000 average for the Trout Unlimited, and the Trout Unlimited up to the full funding.
So we have a motion. Any discussion on that motion, Darby?
Yeah, I was just I recall it. I thought it was a great project. The concern that I have is a capacity one. Where they, in the course of 31 years, have done 33 projects, and now all of a sudden we're doing 11 projects at once. And I question whether that may be a capacity.
Is there someone here from Trout Unlimited, please?
No, for the microphone, I think.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
My name is John Lanchefsky. I'm a state chair for Trout Unlimited. And when we looked at this, one of our criteria was we wanted to make sure we only proposed what we could deliver. And so our intent is to, we think we realistically can complete all these projects by October of 2010. That's what we're shooting for. And I think the capacity issue is the issue, in the southeastern Minnesota, that's what we're talking about. We have the capacity elsewhere, certainly. What we have done in the past has been, limited to weekends and strictly volunteer labor. And the proposal, and largely it's also somewhat limited by the capacity for design and supervision of the project. And what we would intend to do is to contract with some very well qualified individuals, provide those services to allow us to do work, 5 days a week instead of on a weekend. We would still arrange it so that, Friday and Saturday could use the volunteer labor, but those other 3 days a week we would contract with somebody. So we think it's realistic. Otherwise, we wouldn't be proposing it. So,
David,
any other questions?
Yeah, my question is, are all of the protected or the projected, the proposed projects on protected property? Is there permanent protection on them?
All of our projects were permanent easements. There's one possible exception.
There can be no exceptions under our rules.
Well, this has, I'm not positive on one particular stretch on the Straight River. It's a public water, it's a navigable water. Most anglers fish from pinhole. There is public access in that regard. So there is fishing access to the water.
But understand, our rule was that the property that's being restored had to have protection, permanent protection, so someone couldn't come in later and change the work that had been done because the landowner came.
They could never deny access. There is
access isn't the issue.
Okay.
If you wanted to put nice grass there and they wanted to plant a bunch of trees and destroy what you've done, can they do it?
No. The work is in the channel. They'd have to get DNR permission to modify the habitat work. It's in the channel of the stream. Nobody could modify that.
Any other questions for Mr. Lanchefsky? Yes, Helen.
Mr. Chair, and you raised this question in our conversation yesterday. Are there land easements that you're working in that are privately held land with public easements on them that you're doing some of the restoration work in?
Yes, and I would say most of it is on privately held land with permanent access easements.
And so, Mr. Chair, don't the easements require the private landowner to do some restoration themselves? I mean, what is their obligation under their existing easements? Why aren't they doing some of this work themselves?
I don't believe they're required to do any. They're just prevented from denying access to the area. But there is no affirmative requirement that they restore habitat on their property. That's not them.
So let me just follow up. Yeah, part of the work that you're going to do is stream bank restoration work, right?
Yes.
Is the property that you're doing the work on protected by permanent conservation easement on the land, not access, but on the land?
Yes. Within that corridor, it's permanently protected within that
corridor.
If they could not modify reverse restoration work.
Right. Mr. Lanchefsky, if you could just clarify, you heard the discussion about projects and where they're located throughout the state. Could you give us, you've got 11 projects.
Yes.
Could you give us just a general description, just the one-minute version again, where these are? I know they're in our notebooks, we've all read them, but we've read a lot of proposals. Help refresh my memory.
Well, they're scattered across the state. There's one in the Red River Valley, there's one in the Straight River near Park Rapids. Black says there's another one near our Catholic State Park, Catalina Creek. There's one on the North Shore at the Sucker River. There are several in southeastern Minnesota, and then what I would consider really a metro stream is actually the Hay Creek and Red Wings. And then there's two projects on the Vermilion. So we actually have three metropolitan, what we consider metro area streams that we're working on.
Thank you. Any further discussion? We have a motion, and Bill, can you just restate that motion?
The motion is to reduce W7 by $792,060 and increase Fish, Game, and Wildlife 17 by the same amount, $792,060, which brings it to full funding.
Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, just concerned, what's the final number down the for the AMA FGW7?
So, Beth?
Is it Hanson with that?
I'll have to look that up.
Let's see,
Five four two seven nine four zero. Thank you.
It's on the screen.
Very good. Okay, so we have those, that change. Again, we have, and I guess, members, instead of going in order, it seems like we're going just through projects. I'm comfortable with that, and we just need to be mindful of the fact that we have just a little over $9 million in unallocated dollars, and so I would just entertain discussion on any further changes that we need to make to these 15 projects. Jim.
I would like to recommend that on W15, the waterfall production areas, that we consider fully funding that proposal. That was a one-to-one match. We're letting a lot of $3 walk away there. These projects do all the things this amendment was designed for. Wetland grassland complexes, carbon sinks, erosion control, flood control, and the responsibility of the tax responsibility is shifted to the federal government. It seems to me that this project is too good and too many $3 there to let this walk away. So I would recommend we fully fund WPA.
So we have a motion to increase the funding and fill the amount of the increase.
Increase it by $1,675,000.
So a motion to increase W15 by $1,675,000 to fully fund that at the requested amount of $5.6 million. Any discussion on that motion, Rick?
I'd like to raise the opportunity of Jim's point is reducing a couple of the WMA acquisitions to make up the difference. My reason for that is that the FILT obligation, that the federal government's going to pick up the FILT, I'm more supportive of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife acquisitions and restorations than WMA.
So, Rick, let's take up this motion that Jim has, and then you could raise that in the motion subsequent to the decision on this one. Is there any further discussion on that motion? So, again, let's please.
Do we have anybody from Dustin Limited here?
There is someone. Yeah, John? Oh,
John,
come forward.
I think you may add some value to that. Your question, John, I know we discussed this. If that was fully funded at $5.6 million, could you handle that in this time frame you're talking about?
Oh, so this would be for the Fish and Wildlife Service funds. So
W-15?
W-15, which is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So I think that question is more appropriately directed.
Okay.
Jim, do you mind coming forward? I think the same line of questioning we had of Mr. Simon from the DNR about WMA acquisitions. So the question just received blessed is if $5.6 million was appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to secure additional waterfall production areas, could that money, do you have the capacity and do you have willing sellers that have gone through that process and you would be able to extend those dollars?
Yes, in partnership with, excuse me, Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited, the service would be able to spend those dollars on acquisitions and reparations on this property.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, Ellen.
How long would it take you to use up that much money?
Well, it depends on acceptance of appraised property by the landowner. We suspect, and you know, after an indication from the council at this meeting, that it looks like it may be going to the legislature for full support funding. What we would do is put the wheels in process to start the process early. We would say we would have no problem in spending those dollars by the time allotted by the council.
The 2 years?
We would have no problem doing that. With the existing capacity that we have, no additional staff would be hired. These dollars would go to a straight acquisition and restoration.
And restoration as well?
Correct.
And the match would be approximately a one-to-one match?
Yes, that is correct.
Is there any further discussion on that motion? Again, the motion would be to increase the W-15 proposal to the full funding of $5.6 million. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So we have that change. Bill.
I wonder if I could get the Ducks Unlimited representative up.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, my question to John would be, your funding here is a 2.5, basically. Kind of your feeling, or can you give me some idea as to should that be funded a little higher, would you be able to handle that or not?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Anderson, John Schneider from Ducks Unlimited, that's plenty, to be honest with you. $2.5 million is a very generous allocation. We would be thankful for any significance of the allocation, quite frankly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Wayne? FGW18, the Lake Superior Steelhead Association, that started out at Spring County 5. There's actually a very small amount of money requested based on where we're at. And if I recall, a lot of that was personal labor being donated by individual people up in that country. And I would recommend as well that be fully funded at 325 instead of the 245.
So we have a motion from Wayne to increase the amount that would be allocated to FGW18 from $245 to $320,500. Is there someone from the Lake Superior Steelhead Association that's here?
Yes.
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
So the question I would have would be the same question we've heard all along, that you're the volunteer organization, which is quite a bit of money. If in fact the council recommends and the legislature appropriates $320,000 to this project, number one, can this project be carried out given the resources that you have as a volunteer organization? Secondly, the timeline to Senator Anderson's question about how long would that take?
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we can perform this project at the fully funded $320,500. We have at our disposal seven conservation partners, and we can use some of their expertise, and we're also going to contract out the labor. Much like I said in our first visit here, and as the TU representative, being just a grassroots volunteer organization, we have a couple weekends a year we've done all our projects previously. We're going to have some people we're going to hire so they can be working 5 days a week in this watershed to perform these projects. And as I heard some of the questions being asked, I kind of wrote down kind of an idea what I envision happening. This first year, we want to make sure we get something done through actual conservation, not just planning, not just conceptual approach. We want to actually have some work done. We anticipate this year through our organization having about 2,000 trees in the ground. So for 2009, it makes us look good. It's a, we're going to use our money, our donated time first, so you can to be able to show that we can handle this project to the committee. It also, I think, makes the committee looking good by selecting us that some work is done in the first year, not just planning or conceptual type project.
Sure.
I envision your funding to be used the first and second year, and we're going to take your funding and we're actually going to leverage up to possibly $3 for every dollar that you give us now. I've actually, in the meetings I had last week, I think I've uncovered with a group we're involved with the DNR and MPC, and we think we found another funding source, a federal funding source, that would actually match on top of what we already anticipate getting matched on this. So we originally anticipating about $750,000 roughly through your funds and other matching funds to get. We believe we can get some more matching funds on top of that.
Mr. Short, in your proposal, you had $320,000 coming from the LASARD fund.
Yes.
And then another $320,000 coming from the Clean Water Fund.
Correct.
In my allocation, I actually doubled your amount because I don't think the prospects of getting the Clean Water Fund for Steelhead is highly likely. So my question to you is, if you don't get the $320,000 from the Clean Water Fund, can you start?
Yes, we can. And how we can start is we will have $50,000 in in-kind labor and some donations from our club and some other supporting clubs. We also are going to get $100,000, I've been told, it looks like through a federal source for the coastal management program. The director said he was, if we have a match, he said they can get $100,000 of a match.
And Mr. Chair, that's your bottom. If you don't get any more money, is this wasted?
No, absolutely not.
And I mean no more a year from now, 2 years, 3 years.
No, there's a lot of corridors that need to be fixed, and we can fix what we need to fix, or at least a big portion of that.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on this motion that would increase FWG 18 to the full funding of $320,500?
Rick? Yeah, I was going to follow up with, I thought David would ask the question that there's permanent protection monitoring.
In our proposal, what we are going to do, we are going to actually set up with these landowners conservation easements, whether it be county or whether it would be private parties. And a lot of this, if you look at our map that we have in our proposal, there's a lot of people that already have watershed stewardship projects already in place. So that conservation easement would just dovetail right into those conservation projects already set up in the Knife River watershed.
And who would hold the easement?
I believe how I envision it, the easement would be on the property, and actually what our intent would be is to actually get recorded on the deed if possible.
No, but who would hold it?
The person who owns the property would hold
it. No, there's got to be an organization that holds the conservation easement.
Okay.
Who owns it?
You need to understand our requirement is that you can't do work on that property unless there's a permanent conservation easement in place.
Okay.
Because we want to ensure that what we do is permanent work. And
Correct.
There's no guarantee if you do restoration on property that doesn't have an easement that it won't be torn out later.
Okay.
So I'm a bit unclear. You said you would acquire easements on these properties. Can you give me a sense, without acquiring any additional easements at all, who owns this land right now that you're going to be doing work on?
Yes, I can. I have a breakdown on our map, and I can read this right off. The Knife River Watershed, 29,000 acres of this is owned by the state of Minnesota, St. Louis County, and Lake County. Of the 54,000 acres of the total watershed, 29,000 is owned by state, county, and people, or ownership.
So what is being said is that you can't use this money for work on private land without the assurance through the conveyance of that right to the state or whoever is
or a nonprofit.
Or a nonprofit that that will be held in perpetuity in a natural condition.
We can do that. I guess I didn't realize we had to actually have somebody else actually hold the rights. But we can do that because there's 25 people in this water, 25% of this watershed, which is approximately 602 acres of this watershed, that's privately owned, that they already enrolled in stewardship plans. And I would imagine most of those people are looking to get trees planted on their property, and they would be willing to do that.
Sure. Do you have the actual sites identified that you're going to work on, or are you...
Yes, for the most part we do. We have in one of the other maps we have the areas of beaver impact on this, and the DNR has identified them. We've actually talked to these people in the past about getting access to this property. They actually have done some work. So we have the list of the watershed areas that are impacted, and the DNR has the list of those people's names so we can contact them.
Great. So have you been in negotiations with those people about a permanent conservation easement, which is their private land?
At this point, we have not. We have on past projects, but we haven't actually approached people because we hadn't been the funding. But we could start tomorrow doing that if, in fact, the funding were to go through.
Where, and where would the funding come for the permanent conservation easement?
I don't think I'm following the question.
Well, there are a couple of costs for conservation easements. One, either the landowner can donate the value of the conservation easement to the state or a nonprofit organization,
mm-hmm.
or you have to buy it.
I would imagine that would be something that would be donated by the landowner.
So that's the first step hurdle. The second is that you're going to need to set up long-term stewardship funds to ensure that you can enforce and monitor the terms of that easement. Probably going to cost you $10,000 an easement in permanent funds. Is that figured into your calculations anywhere?
That has not. Currently, what we have is the DNR is flying that property each year, documenting what's going on in the watershed.
I don't know what we want to do, but I'd recommend you talk to Jane Kohatsa right behind you about conservation easements.
Great. I regret to say that I think this project is not ready yet for any funding. I think it needs to come back next year when it has some of these issues worked out.
So we have a motion on the table right now to increase the funding. David?
I just want to, do you know, are there projects that you're proposing to get done that are on public land?
Yes.
And would you be comfortable restricting the use of these funds to what is already permanently protected by virtue of being public land?
We would.
So the follow-up is, if we were to allocate or to recommend and the legislature was to appropriate $320,500, could all of that money be directed towards those public lands? Warren David's line of question.
Yes, it could.
Any further discussion on the motion to increase funding for this project from $245,000 to $320,500? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No. Aye.
Motion carries. Members, we are probably at a good time to break. I'm informed what this committee does is very punctual. They begin their meetings precisely at 10:30. For members in the audience, if we can go through this bill and we are done by about an hour from now, by about a quarter after 11, we will come back into this room and continue our discussion. If it goes much longer than that, since we have to recess at 12, we will just recess early so that members can get to their respective bodies by the 12 o'clock start. So we stand adjourned until, if it's longer than an hour, till the call of the chair roughly 2 o'clock to 15.
No control.
I'd like to call the meeting of the Hearing Council back to order. I'd like to pick up where we left off, which is working on the worksheet of the 15 projects where we have agreed to make allocation for the fiscal 2010, recommendation for the fiscal 2010 expenditures from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We had just completed our discussion of the Lake Pierce Steelhead Association project, and I guess I would open it up, council members, to other changes to the 15 projects. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was going to follow up on what we talked about with Mr. Cox's motion earlier, that I would move that W7 and E9 be reduced $837,500 each, and that was the amount that was used to increase the W15.
So, again, I'm not writing as fast as you're going through this, so W7 and T9 being reduced and by the amounts of
$837,500 Each.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Representative Watson.
I think I mentioned earlier that I supported the U.S. Fish and Wildlife that the tilt obligation to the federal government is covered by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. I think that the WMA acquisition, I think we need to have more WMAs, but I also think we're going to be having tilt obligations for these WMAs, but the budget that the governor proposed, and probably as we deal with the additional times that we're reducing tilt payments. And so there's a tilt obligation for the state and wildlife management areas. And so again, the kind of adding the one, taking from the other, I would see reducing the two WMA.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson, with that in mind, why not zero those out? If the issue is concerned about the tilt payment.
I was trying to be collaborative and not zero them out. But I want to do that. I mean, I think there's a tilt obligation there that if I had my druthers, I would be dealing with the easements and the restoration stronger. But I know that there's support on the council for WMAs. Mm-hmm. About having seen both of those receive, one receive 11 and one receive 10, both. So it's almost unanimous. But I think we can reduce that tilt consequence.
Wayne?
Mr. Chairman, am I somehow of the understanding that we cannot take money from the existing allocation that's in excess of 3.5 and move them forward? Do we really need to be taking money from the top 15, reducing some in order to be able to increase some? It's my understanding that there was available dollars left over to accommodate that.
Wayne, in response to your question, that's up to the council. That's the prerogative of the council to decide what that final amount is. We have been increasing to date so far this morning, but there's a motion now to reduce two of these. So that's up to the wishes of the council. Any other further discussion on that item?
I'm sorry, how much?
Yeah,
what was the dollar figure again, Representative Hanson?
$837,500 each reduction.
Bill, you want to just restate the motion?
The motion is to reduce P9 by $837,500 and to reduce W7 by $837,500. And I'd like to make it 838 and 837 so that we're in round numbers.
Okay.
So P9 would be reduced to $3,075,000. W7 would be reduced to $2,063,000.
Which one is the higher reduction?
The larger number.
P9.
And W7 is reduced $500 less.
Right. So W7 becomes $2,063,000. P9 becomes $3,075,000.
Any further discussion on that motion?
Bob? Mr. Chair, I hate to introduce this, but I know Senator Anderson is not here. And I know we would all benefit from having full participation of all the council members. If there's a way that we can, Representative Hanson, keep open the notion that after she's been informed about this, maybe you would consider if there was an opportunity to reopen that when she returns.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that we are mindful of that.
I'm willing to lay it on the table until she comes back, because I know that people want to discuss it with a lot.
Great, thank you very much. I think that's a really good idea. We want to make sure we have full participation in all our discussions. So while that is on the table, let's move on. Other changes?
So this does not circumvent us from doing additional motions while we're waiting?
It's on the table.
Not if it's on the table, no.
Okay. Could I please move that we take all the recommendations 1 through 15, carry them forward with no further reductions?
Okay.
Yes, Rick. I think if we, I mean, that's a massive motion. I think it's, if we're not going to be discussing one motion, put on the table for discussion, but I wouldn't want to have to.
I think it's a general agreement that we aren't going to take any actions until we have Senator Anderson back here. We'll find out that she's not participating.
You know where she is.
No, in fact, I'm just wondering, Craig is...
Call your staff. I know that you got the back order. They said they would get the message.
I think you've got a couple of other appropriations, including the Lake Superior Steelhead, where you've got $320,500. Some of those are going to have to be rounded to the nearest thousand.
Yeah. And it was not my intent as you developed the rebuttal to the bill that you would do that to be in conformance with what you're typically doing in appropriations.
Yeah. It also might be nice, though, to do it as far as when you vote on a package that the dollar amounts be adjusted to the, because, you know, which is 500, you go low or you go high? go down?
Right. Okay. So, let me try this. When we move to reduce the Lake Superior Steelhead to $320,000 even, get rid of the $500.
Let's just note the point of procedure here. Okay. Wayne had a motion on the table, and if you're amenable to that, if you could also table that motion until we have Senator Anderson back, that would be great. Are you agreeable to that?
I would agree with, but I'd like to make one clarification, the reason why.
Okay.
When we began this process, we had a maximum allocation, which we all had an opportunity to look at, for which we could reduce from. As a collaborative group, the LOAC allocation appears to be the minimum that we want to be funding that. And so therefore, why would we want to go back and fund it to reduce it further?
Oh, excuse me, someone has a cell phone. I'm picking up a lot of information to just make sure it's shut off. And so Wayne, just you're okay tabling that motion?
I am.
Okay. David, I'd like to take up your motion, which I think is pretty non-controversial.
I would hope so.
Okay. And so, just if you could restate that, please.
That we reduce the Lake Superior Steelhead Association's allocation to $320,000 even.
Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So that's going to be reduced by 500. And I understand, Bill, that Ellen is on her way. Okay, so we will be able to continue those two motions shortly. Yes, let's proceed. Jim?
I guess I'm going outside Wayne's motion here, but I would recommend that we reduce W-3 to approximately half that amount. My thought process on that is that money has traditionally been bonded for. And I think we get into the issue of are we supplanting or substituting. I think we have maybe a responsibility to pick up a portion of that, but I think we're substituting here, and I think we should reduce that to half the current allocation, and hopefully waters or some other method will be found to fund that project.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd recommend that we bring Kevin up and let him talk on the subject.
Sure. Kevin, that's the theory. It's Alliance. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Council. I'm Kevin Lyons. I'm the Conservation Easement Manager for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Our request to LOHC is to look at leveraging the state's Rim Reserve Conservation Easement Program with the Federal Wetlands Reserve Program. And our particular request that, although it says $13 million, I think actually we were at our last Wetland Collaborative, we submitted the priority request of $9.5 million to the council, so I'm not quite sure about the numbers in the table there, but this particular project looks at acquiring permanent conservation easements and restoring wetlands that have been previously drained and native grasslands in association. The particular funding that's necessary is for
for the state having the ability to leverage federal dollars at roughly $1 state for $1.4 federal wetlands reserve program. And last year in 2008, through a bonding appropriation, we were able to leverage 20% of the nation's WRP dollars to Minnesota in this partnership, enrolling 98 easements for 9,775 acres. And this request is looking at continuing that. The issue for the council, and from a funding perspective, is that the federal fiscal year, which began October 1st in 2008, they've received funding, NRCSS funding, and we have no funding available to leverage these dollars in fiscal year 2009, their federal fiscal year 2009, which is what we're presently in, even though they have already approximately $10 million in Minnesota's NRCS bank. In addition, a new federal fiscal year will occur October 1st, 2010, and that same opportunity then exists at that time as well. So this request was to look at leveraging both federal fiscal years. That's why our initial request was $23 million. The Wetland Collaborative, when the instruction it received from the council was to come back and look at no more than a $10 million high priority request, which is what the collaborative has done with this request.
Question for you that came up before we broke, which is this notion of where geographically these properties would be. Can you give us a better sense of the geographic distribution of these projects?
Of course, as you remember in our earlier presentation to the council, the RIMWRP partnership is available statewide. We have an evaluation score sheet that's used to rank and rate every project that's submitted for funding. In addition to that, our process, we also target the Prairie Pothole Joint Venture area as the highest priority area, and that's primarily from a migratory wildlife perspective as well as native grasslands as well. That the Prairie Pothole Joint Venture generally reflects Minnesota's prairie pothole areas that was once in place, as well as our northern tall grass prairie. So we're trying to capture two critical landscape functions with that proposal. So we do prioritize those projects, but applicants are at landowners are eligible statewide, and that would include the metropolitan area as well. And in the last sign-up, you know, we took 98 easements for roughly 10,000 acres and across the, you know, a very significant portion of the state. With this, we can prioritize where we want enrollment. Within the RIMWRP partnership, we've been partnering and prioritizing the WRP federal along with our state priority areas. The legislature also bonding session also made some legislative priorities for us, which called for our enrollments as well. So the program is extremely flexible. We can prioritize what areas of the state the council would feel are the most important. And, you know, it's a program that we've been successful in. I would say two-thirds of the state has historically been our priority areas for conservation agents through the RIM Reserve Program. And I do have a map showing the greater metropolitan area as well as where we've taken easements in the past that I certainly would share with the council as well.
That's great. And Bob, while you're doing that, Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lawrence, the question I have for you is the motion by Mr. Cox was essentially on the belief of the knowledge that in the past this is all going to be non-compounding and that we have an obligation as to substitute. I know this is not traditionally a bonding year, but I would predict that there will be a bonding bill at some point. My question to you is, have you made any proposals for bonding that would be in line with what we have proposed here that would be in this legislative session? And then secondly is, when do you traditionally make your bonding decision for what would be the next legislative session? I believe that's in the fall, in the governor's, I think his budget doesn't come out actually probably until February of 2010, but you'll have some decisions. So I'm trying to keep that in mind in light of Mr. Cox's point.
Once, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schroeder, Gallagher has not made a bonding request this session. I am aware of Representative Rick Hansen has
introduced a bill doing that, but the board has not. It's not a bonding cycle. I work for the governor's office, and the governor has not submitted a bonding proposal. So at this point in time, our needs here is that we need to ensure that we can get RIM WRP leveraged this fiscal year, this federal fiscal year, so that we can ensure these conservation dollars are not lost. Unlike in 2007 when we could not partner, the state of Minnesota sent back 13 million federal funds to Washington that could not be obligated. So I'm trying to make sure that does not happen again.
And so, and just the second question was on the issue of the next budget cycle in 2010, your bonding proposal would not be finalized by the governor until February, roughly, if I remember right.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schroeder, that would be correct. We would probably start developing that in late August, and through the governor, costs would not be finalized until January 2010, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I've had a bill introduced, and it's gone through one hearing already for $5 million for room. And part of the, I think that our experience last year with bonding $25 million, there's a great deal of a great reservoir of support in the legislature for RIM and the partnership with WRP, because you can see the federal dollars we were able to obtain and the job creation that's involved in buying the local seed, breaking the tile, having a local contractor working. So I think that, remember the last meeting where Mr. Lyons presented, we had some questions on the calendar of how we can move through this, you know, to get obligations so that we can track those dollars and get projects on the ground. And I would not support the motion, because I think that this is really a good deal that we have. I think that even if we pass a $5 million bonding bill, we can obligate the $9 million and the $5 million, because we showed last year we could attract dollars that could have gone to other states because the state has stepped forward with that commitment. People know it works. The local districts know how to implement it. And just finally, on the constitutional language, there's probably nothing more directly related to what our charge is. It says protect, restore, and enhance wetlands. I mean, this brings in the dollars with a permanent easement that's there, and it's at lower cost in terms of acquisition, and you don't have the tilt consequences. So I think the nine is a good step attraction. I'm certainly going to be trying to get, if there's a bonding bill, and we don't know yet, but if there is one, I'm going to make the case, and I believe, at least in the House, there's strong support for RIM WRP, so we're going to have some basic amount of spending for bonds.
Mr. Chair, and is there a Senate companion?
Yes, the Senate companion is offered by our Senator Dennis Fredericks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No
one? Mr. Chair, I think that the legislature really is determined to pass a small bonding bill this year, but I wouldn't put any eggs in that basket this year. That would be my advice. And I don't know, I'm not on the bonding committee, so I really am not privy to the discussions that have been had, but it'll be small. The governor's opposed to it. You know, traditionally we've had bonding bills every other year, and it's sort of gotten to be that there's small ones in the in-between years, but I wouldn't expect that the same level of support for various things would be in there that we saw last year and that we can expect in 2010. So, you know, there's always hope that we could get some more support in the bonding bill given the matching dollars, but I certainly wouldn't count on that this year.
Mr. Chair, I totally concur with you, Representative Hansen, on the importance of funding the programs. Kevin, could you give us an approximation of the metropolitan area acreage under the reserve easements in process, roughly, plus or minus?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bench, to be honest, that would be simply a guess right now, and I would prefer not to guess. I can get you that information very accurately, but I don't have that on the top of my head. I'm sorry.
As a follow-up comment to Senator Anderson, too, a lot of these projects are hidden in overall projects. So there are some major projects that we're looking at in the metropolitan area, and some very important ones for RIM easements in process. So these have to be brought out and recognized, too, as not an ignoring of the metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any further discussion? Jim?
Mr. Lyons, I would just ask the Board of Soil and Water Resources is primarily a water and soil conservation group. I'm not sure that's the correct term, but your main charge is not fish and wildlife habitat. I mean, it's a consequence of your action. And I'm in full support of these easements. I don't want to, I'm going to think that I'm not, but I think we're taking the full responsibility. Have you made this presentation to the water portion of this amendment? I think they have some responsibility here besides us.
That has not been done, and there's not a process for that to occur yet. Maybe I would like to just remind the council what RIM Reserve stands for, Reinvest in Minnesota, which the legislature established in 1986 in the hunting and fishing coalition that Governor Perfect at the time created, and the legislature ultimately established both a public RIM portion that DNR administers, it's a RIM critical habitat portion, the license plates that we all have, and then it's the RIM Reserve, the private land piece. I would be very much in dissenting view that RIM is not a fish and wildlife habitat conservation project. I believe it's the best fish and wildlife habitat conservation project on private lands. And we've been extremely successful, I would say the most successful in the nation, and just being able to leverage Wetlands Reserve Program, which is the federal conservation program on private lands with the state program, and accounting for 20% of the nation's dollars in that, I think certainly shares that in my view. So I believe very strongly this is a wetland habitat restoration project.
Bill?
Two questions, Mr. Chair. And maybe I'm confused here a little bit. It's kind of hard to imagine that. You say that the request we have is $13 million here, and all you were saying was $9 million. Could you be confused on the number?
Bill?
That's my doing, and I apologize for it. John Jaspy sent an email indicating that in order to capture all of the federal money that might be available, the amount that we would need would be between $9 and $13 million. And I did not catch the reduction in the fish and wildlife. I believe that's where I was. Fish and Wildlife second submission.
Mr. Chair, council members, the Wetland Collaborative, which Bowser was, the RIM WRP partnership was part of that package that was submitted to the council on February 9th. And then subsequently to that, we were asked to go back and prioritize or at least try to rank projects by the Wetland Collaborative. And the groups got together, and from that meeting, we prioritized the RIM WRP partnership through the Wetland Collaborative as the highest project. And we were under the understanding that we had to limit our proposals to $10 million. So that's why we came back with a 9.5 recommendation to the council. With that in mind, limiting that, recognizing that our initial request for $23 million, which would leverage two federal fiscal years, the one that NRCS is presently in at the moment, and one that they will be in on October 1st, 2009, which that begins, that $23 million would leverage both of those years. But we went back to the Wetland Collaborative and made a prioritization and a reduction down to $9.5 million based on the directions that we received from Mr. Beckley.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify, because I keep hearing people say, understandably, there's no process. I guess you said that. There's no process yet for the Clean Water Amendment. And all I want to say is, you know, as a state agency, you know what the process would be if you wanted to try to seek funding for this, for increased money in RIM, you'd have to go to the governor, and the governor would have to approve it and put it in his budget, and then it would come to my committee, and we would consider it as part of the governor's budget. That has not happened. The governor isn't proposing it in the regular budget or in the clean water budget. And so the governor, I don't know if this is, the governor didn't make proposals in this area, he was leaving that to the council. So There is a process, and it's the legislative process, and there's also the Clean Water Council, which made recommendations, which does not include them. So I just want to clarify that. If someone wanted to introduce a bill to ask for this funding to come from the clean water portion of the money, they, any senator or representative could do that, just like Representative Hansen has introduced a bill for this in the bonding bill. So that could happen if someone wanted to, and then we would look at that in the committee process.
Thank you, Bill. Let's get a follow-up question then. How assured are we that the federal government is going to have any money to leverage? I mean, I think that's a fair question, I think.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, well, presently, NRCS, Minnesota NRCS has $8 million or $10 million in their bank, and they expect USDA is a annually appropriated, or excuse me, WRP, Wetlands Reserve Program, is an annually appropriated program through the Federal Farm Program. And so they will be getting annual appropriations for their program for the next 5 years through the 2008 Farm Bill that was just passed this past spring of 08. So we can count on this funding level for this partnership for the next 5 years, assuredly. And so that, and not to get into the particular details, but the USDA and the Farm Bill is funded out of the CCC, Credit Commodity Corporation, and they have, the Secretary of Agriculture has the discretion to those funds, and this will be a funded annual appropriation by USDA.
Thank you. Great. And this line is going to be corrected if we step up and other states don't, and we have money on the table, but not be spent from other states. And that's exactly what happened last year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes. I mean, last year we were able to secure 20% of the nation's WRP dollars because of this partnership, and we would believe that opportunity would exist again, definitely within the RIM WRP partnership.
Is there any further discussion on this motion?
Just a quick clarification. That $9.5 million, is that locked in, assuming there's money from the feds, is that locked in the maximum that we can get? Would we be losing federal money if we stayed at $9.5 million?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, the $9.5 million would only allow us to leverage one federal fiscal years of funding, which is presently ongoing. So the federal fiscal year beginning October 1st, 2009 would be at risk with this proposal that we presently have in front of you at $9.5 million. This would only be enough money to leverage $16.5 million with a little bit of balance that we have left from last bonding's appropriations. So the $9.5 million would allow us to leverage one federal fiscal year of funding at roughly $16.5 million.
Further discussion.
Could you restate which motion that we're voting on?
Bill,
please. Well, Mr. Chair, I want to be sure that I think we have funding ahead of this one.
We do. Yes. So I'd like to take this one up, and then we're going to go back and pick up two that we have laid over on the table.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, just in my own mind, I believe Wayne's was ahead of this one, and that was to lock in, if I understood that correctly, lock in the amount that we had.
Not to decrease. You
correct. Not to decrease. So I'm not sure procedurally what makes most sense, but I am mindful of that impact.
I think we have a motion on the table. If we're going to take, and council can correct me here, but I think we're in the process of a motion on the table. If we were going to take a motion, we have to have a motion to take off the table that are there. And I think that we are a privileged motion, so we probably have to go to mine, and then council can correct me on the financial procedure.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you have two motions on the table, and they've been tabled. And then you have, this is the motion you have in front of you. You have Jim's motion in front of you, and you need to dispose of one way, either table it or take it up.
Any further discussion on the motion then to, and again, Bill, to restate the motion that we're discussing right now?
The motion is to reduce W3, which is reinvesting Minnesota Wetland Reserve Program leveraging project by half
to $4,529,000.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Okay, motion does not carry. Now we're going to go back to the motions that were laid over. And I would, like Rick, yours was the first in line, so I'd like you to restate that motion.
I move to take from the table my motion relating to P9 and W7 reductions.
For a motion?
Let's take it from the table.
So we have a motion then to take it from the table. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
So we have a motion before us.
The motion before us is to reduce T9 838,000 and reduce W7 837,000. And this is the amount that we increased W15 prior to the break. And my rationale for this is to reduce our account obligation that we commonly apply by management.
Any further discussion on that motion? Members, are you clear what the motion is? Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, the motion does not carry. Now we have another motion that was laid over, and that was Wayne's motion. We need a motion to put that table back, or that motion back on the table.
Make a motion to put back on the table the motion to not decrease the LHA allocation. Motion to take on the 1 through 15 as described in the table.
Any further discussion on that motion?
I guess I'm confused. Does that mean we can't discuss it at any time in the future, or we just can't discuss it until we get to the allocation of the numbers that have reached 7? Is it a forever or a temporary?
Temporary. So we can get through the first 15, get these things done, and then come back afterwards.
Okay.
I would oppose the motion because the average allocation is just that. It's not deliberative. It's an average allocation from voting that was done not out in the open. It's not done in front of all the people here. It was done at home or in their offices, and you are averaging with somebody. If five people voted the full allocation and other people voted zero, you may not have, you're moving forward an average obligation without deliberation. And I frankly think we should deliberate each one of these and look at what the actual capacity and ability and effect is and how it complies with the plan, statewide conservation plan, in terms of what people can actually do. So moving forward, just an average, I think is not a wise decision.
So the motion before us is to remove from the table Wayne's motion. We're not debating the motion per se, but just moving. We have a motion on the table to put that motion back in place. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, so the motion carries. Now we have a motion before us. And again, the motion, Bill, could you restate that motion?
Mr. Andrew's motion is to temporarily put a floor at the average allocation on the allocation to the 15 proposals receiving 7 or more allocations.
I believe Wayne is saying that effectively whatever's up on the screen at this moment. Not what was on the piece of paper that was handed out. And then I could be mistaken on this, but I believe we've discussed and or taken votes that related to P9, W3, W15, FGW7, FGW17, P13, W7, F7, and FGW18. I could have missed one, but I believe I'm trying to get to Representative Hanlon's point, which I think is legitimate to consider, that we have... And we have directly taken action on as it relates to those particular matters. So, to his point, the ones that have not yet been deliberated here are the ones that I've not mentioned.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, under the circumstances that we have gone through quite a few more since the motion was made, I would like to withdraw the motion.
Okay. The motion has been withdrawn.
Okay.
I would make a motion that P-17 be removed, not because it's not a good project, but because I think it falls in a category that should be small grants, not what we're doing here. We set up a small grant project with a tentative ceiling of $400,000, and I personally think anything that falls in that category in terms of money should be in the small grant program. So my motion would be to remove P-17.
Okay, so we have a motion to remove P-17.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Possibly we could get Ted to speak on that issue.
Is someone surprised Matt?
Yeah.
Good morning, Matt. Welcome.
Good morning.
Did you hear the question?
I didn't hear a question.
And we will hear it. Yeah. This question is still like you directed to Mr. Angers. Or was it Les? Les, I'm sorry.
Matt, could you explain P-17? Is this part of a larger project, or is this a standalone? How do you feel about that going under the small grants program?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bench, it is part of our program, our restoration program. Mm-hmm. I think we could possibly, depending on how the small grants program lays out, move some of those projects into the small grants program. But again, if this is our 75 chapters across the state are working hard to restore habitats on the public land, and it is part of a larger initiative.
Bill?
So you have to part of my question. There's 75 different chapters involved in this.
We have 75 chapters in Minnesota. There are a handful of chapters that are involved directly with specific projects that are in this report.
And my only follow-up is this is the only one that Feds ever came in with? Am I right? Awesome.
P7, kind of midway down that spreadsheet, Bill, has it's an acquisition partnership for $3 million, of which the average is 1.7.
Yeah, we put in as part of the Prairie Grassland Collaborative 3 acquisition, restoration, and enhancement work. We also put in wetland restoration and public lands to the Wetland Collaborative.
Thank you.
As long as you have here, I want to just talk to you about P7. Okay.
Sure.
So with P7, we have a reduction there, and that's Prairie Heritage Fund acquisition. If you could. So what's the difference with the P7 and P17? And also in relation to DNR Wildlife P9.
Mr. Chair, well, the relationship is what you see in P7 is Pheasants River's collective land acquisition effort. And we provided a map as a follow-up to the council that laid out where all those acquisitions are. Additions to existing wildlife management areas. They're in cooperation with our local chapters for the grassroots. They're driven by our local volunteers, the willing sellers, and they're building upon our investments that we've already made in wildlife habitat. And we work in conjunction with DNR area managers, making sure that those projects are something they want included into the WMA system. And as far as how they're related to the restoration and enhancement pieces, they're not. We did include restoration dollars in our P7, so we do obviously intend to make sure that when we acquire something that we get the initial habitat restoration dollars.
Any further discussion, Dark?
Yeah, just a general comment. It seems to me at some point we really need to make a distinction between small grants and big grants. Is it a dollar amount? Is it some other criteria? It's fuzzy in my mind as to what boundaries separate one from the other.
So, Dark, just in response to that, one thing we could do is, for example, if you look above where the DNR has it's the WMA, not acquisition, but it's P13, which is
accelerated current grass land management. And what we're talking about, Matt, if I understand it, is really just dovetailing in with that larger initiative of cooperatively restoration and enhancement work on these lands. Is that correct?
I guess I'm not, as Mr. Chair, not as familiar with exactly what the nuts and bolts of P13 are, but yes, when we're talking about state WMA lands, we're working to increase and accelerate the restoration management.
And so just for my clarification, P17 would be working exclusively on wildlife management area lands. The 200,000 that you've requested.
I believe we also have waterfall production area lands in there, but they're public lands that are open to public hunting.
Further questions? Scott?
You know, I understand the goal to try to get a distinction between large ranch and small ranch, but obviously we have some other proposals that have been funded, you know, that are below the $400,000 maximum. So I think if we want to make that distinction, I think we should make that distinction in the next funding section that says if you have grants below this, they should be there. I don't know that, I mean, this project got was voted on by 7 of the 12 members. I would hate to see that removed from consideration just because it happened to be what we now have determined is the small grants amount.
Chair, my recommendation, Matt, would be to drop the P17 and increase P7 to an even $2 million and incorporate that into that totally.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table. Let's take that up. The motion on the table is to remove P17 altogether because it's under the $400,000 cap. Is there any further discussion on Ellen?
Sorry, I should note that waterfowl production areas are owned by whom?
I bet I can even answer that one. I'll take a shot. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Right. Those are federal lands.
So all of this is for state or federal land restoration.
Sean? Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson.
Okay, so further discussion on the motion then to eliminate P17. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion does not carry. So now, was it Wes that had a motion to incorporate that? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
And that increased funding for P7 to $2 million. And leave it at that.
So are you saying replace? Are you saying replace P17 and just eliminate that and move the $200,000 request into the P7?
That's correct.
Wayne?
It's my understanding of the P7 is not a request for $2 million. It was actually a request for $3 million. It's already been due.
That's correct.
So wondering if Mr. Hall could explain whether this is going to drastically short these projects by going with both P7 and P17 with only 2 minutes.
Mr. Chair, members, the reduction, what will happen, we'll do less. We've got ready projects, we've got already in contact with landowners, the land sellers. Less money, we'll do less work.
Does less have a formal motion? Yes, then on that one.
I've taken that as a formal motion.
Yes.
So Bill, can you restate that?
Councilor Bench moves to delete P17 and increase P7 to $2 million.
Any further discussion on that motion?
Chris? I think that's a good motion because just acquisition and restoration as well ties the two together. Because it worked on the IGC acquisition. So, creatively, a few of the challenges you'll have out there so that when the transfer occurs, can be in higher than appropriate fees.
Wayne? Mr. Chair, unfortunately, we're asking him to cut back in two projects then. Would it not be a more advisable thing to put them both together and then fully fund it at the $3 million, excuse me? Because we're taking two projects and cutting it back. if we put them both together, it seems to me we should be able to fund it as a requested amount.
So just to clarify, Wayne, we're actually P7 will be increased by $225,000 and P17 will be reduced by $117,000, given what the averages that we need.
What I would recommend is that if you put them both together under P7, to allocate for the requested amount of $3 million.
I would withdraw my motion if you want to make that a motion.
I would do that.
Okay, so the motion would be then
to add P17 to P7 and make P7 $3 million.
Any further discussion on that one?
Mr. Holland, if you were receiving $3 million and it to be for both acquisitions and restoration, what would be the balance in that?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hanson, basically, under P17, we have identified projects that we would, and I guess, with the intent of the council, bring into the restoration or the acquisition and restoration component. I believe we have $250,000 in our P7 proposal that is slated for restoration. That's where we're at. So 200 plus 250 is 450,000 would be in restoration and the remainder would be in acquisition.
Mr. Chair, Bob, your initial request for restoration was $200,000. I'm just looking at the sheet here. That's your initial request for.
But there was some money in P7 for restoration.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thanks.
So just to clarify, all the properties that would be acquired, you have built into the P7 request restoration costs. This would be additional restoration enhancement costs on either state or federal land. That's correct. And we're just rolling that all into one and funding it totally, both of those components, at $3 million. That's the motion. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
If that motion carries, we'll let Jeff update the numbers. And Ellen, while they're updating the number, Bill and Ellen, you are in the discussion at 12:30, is that correct?
I'm fine with it.
I think it's time then we probably would recess now and we will plan to convene and call the chair by expecting shortly after 2 o'clock, but when both the House and the Senate are back from court sessions. So stand adjourned until later this afternoon.
So I'll go.